that makes a difference.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
What?
If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor.
What difference at this point does it make?
If you're looking to make sense out of what's going on in the world today, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Southern Sense Talk Radio with your host, Annie, the Radio Chick Eubelis, and featuring Curtis C.S. Bennett and the most interesting guest talk
that you'll
radio
find
anywhere on internet radio. And you can join the show and let your voice be heard by dialing 917-889-3675. So sit back, relax, and remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
Friends, the entire world is experiencing food shortages. Supply chain breakdowns continue to have a domino effect on everything, especially food production. Farmers can't plant as many crops now because of fertilizer shortages, forced regulations, and, of course, high fuel prices. This will cause more painful food shortages when we run out of the food we're eating now. You know, food takes time to grow. So when farmers don't plant, well, months later, we don't eat. That's why you need to prepare for an increasing number of food shortages. And the best way is to invest in Ready Hour emergency food from My Patriot Supply. It's a perfect hedge against skyrocketing prices and shortages. Right now, save $50 on a four-week food kit from My Patriot Supply. Go to preparewithsouthernsense.com and get your $50 savings on a four-week emergency food kit that average over 2,000 calories per day. That's preparewithsouthernsense.com. Those who know what's coming are getting prepared now. Well, if you don't want to type in that whole big thing saying preparewithsouthernsense.com and you're on my website, which is Southern Sense, put a dash in the middle, southern-sense, as in common sense, .com, you can easily click on My Patriot Supply and go directly to the website and get your $50 savings. As I'm telling you now, those who know what's coming are getting prepared right now. Shouldn't you? Prepare with southern-sense.com. That's southern-sense.com. Click on My Patriot Supply. Do it now.
All right, and welcome back to another adventure here on Southern Sense. You're listening live on Blog Talk Radio, SHR Media, Global Enlightenment Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, YouTube, Facebook, half a dozen other places, including my own webpage. You can watch live and listen live at southern-sense.com. That's put a dash in the middle, Southern Sense, with a dash in the middle, southern-sense.com. I'm your hostess with the least mostest of Radio Chickadee, Annie, along with my courageous and oh-so-patient co-host, Curtis C.S. Bennett. Good afternoon, Curtis. How are you today?
I am doing fine, a lot cooler, as we said, before the show began. Finally got the air conditioner running after being out for a week here in sunny Florida, but it feels great.
Ah, well, congratulations. It is a little cooler. Autumn started yesterday. We looks like we may have the final hurrah of the hurricane season around the I heard it was heading towards Bermuda and then heading up towards Canada. So you may get a little bit more of it than we are right here. But so far,
yeah.
So good. Nice, sunny, cool day outside. It's nice
overcast.
To have a break from the heat and the rain after weeks and weeks of rain. Well, we got ourselves a bang-up show here today. We've got a newcomer to the show, Mia O'Day. She's the author of a book that is very riveting. This is going to be not an easy interview because of what the background of it is. It's called Mia's Odyssey, Taking Back My Soul. It's the true story of her being a child bride in an abusive marriage. And she's a tenacious woman, and she has survived with six very, very wonderful children. We have also your friend, Webster Barnaby. He's Florida State Representative for District 27. But I do believe because of redistricting in Florida, I hope I have this correct, he's now being moved into District 29 and is running for re-election. I'm probably going to mispronounce your other friend's name, Amania Celeste. She's known as the conservative poet on YouTube. She'll be joining us.
That's right.
And then my friend, former CIA operative, Sam Faddis, he's also the founder of AND Magazine, which is a really fantastic issues magazine. And he gets right smack into the heart and nitty-gritty of a lot of issues, especially dealing with national security. He recently moved AND Magazine from andmagazine.com to AND Magazine at substack.com. So he's getting himself a better platform for the magazine, which has been around for quite a few years. And then we're going to close off with a guest from the Heritage, first time to the show, Erin Dwendell. Dwendell. Let me make sure I get that right. She is a senior research associate on border security and immigration. Boy, has she come at just the right time. So we've got a lot to talk about and a lot to do, Curtis.
Yes, we do, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So we'll have ourselves a really nice, fun show. If anyone has been watching, of course, our president has been stumbling and bumbling through things, so we're going to be talking a lot about that. It's to the point where even nasty Pelosi is not openly saying that he is going to run for re-election. His own good mouthpiece. What the heck is that name? The crazy woman. Oh, jeez. His press secretary. Oh, jeez.
I know her. Making excuses for him.
Yeah, well, even she says that he has not made a decision yet on whether he's running for re-election. You hear this coming from...
No, they haven't made a decision for him.
Yeah.
They.
Yeah. 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 So, well, like I said, we've got a lot to talk about and a lot to do. And something else that just came out today, the Republicans have come out with a commitment to America, a new contract. Actually, it's much stronger than Newt Gingrich's original one back in 94. We're going to be talking about that. That just came out about an hour before we went to air. And a friend of mine was so very kind to shoot me the little pocket card. All right, let's get ourselves moving and the show on the road. Those that listen to the show know that we start off each and every show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication is going out to a police officer here from my state of South Carolina, Police Officer Roy Andrew Barr of the Casey Police Department. His end of watch was Sunday, April 24th of this year. And this is from the Officer Down Memorial page. And there are some errors in their original story that will be corrected as I go through the dedication. And it reads, Police Officer Drew Barr was shot and killed as he and other officers responded to a domestic disturbance call at a home on Rossmore Drive at around 2:45 a.m. It reads, the officer encountered a man in the front yard who opened fire on them, fatally wounding Officer Barr. that we will show later on is actually incorrect. They were met by someone that was a friend of his, and the suspect was already still in the house. Officer Barr had served with the KC Police Department for 6 years and was assigned to the K-9 Division. He also served as a captain with the Moneta Volunteer Fire Department. Officer Barr had previously been shot and wounded in the line of duty after being ambushed following a vehicle pursuit of a stolen car on May 27, 2014. And this is from WIS-TV by Nevin Smith. New details are emerging in the death of Officer Drew Barr. Barr was killed Sunday, April 24, 2022, while responding to a domestic disturbance call in Casey. Investigators said Austin Henderson shot at the officers from inside the home. After a seven-hour negotiation with police, Henderson died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The officials provided new details about the shooting during a press conference. Casey Police Chief Chris Cowan said Henderson moved upstairs from an elevated position with a rifle when officers arrived at the home. Cowan shared that Henderson's wife called 911 from her Apple Watch after she and her three-year-old were moved into a closet. WIS obtained the police incident report from Casey. It says police officers first encountered a man inside a vehicle at Rushmore Drive when they arrived. He was placed into investigative detention. Cowan said the man was a family friend who left a party inside the house after the disturbance started. As the man was being detained, the report said Henderson fired with a rifle at KCPD and hit Barr. While Barr was being loaded into a vehicle, the report says Henderson fired again on law enforcement. Barr was evacuated from the yard and transported to an area hospital where he was pronounced dead. The report says Henderson barricaded himself inside the home with his wife and child. Negotiators from the Columbia Police Department made contact with him and managed to secure the release of both the woman and the child. Tactical teams from the Lexington County Sheriff's Department and the State Law Enforcement Division, SLED, secured a perimeter. They continued to negotiate with the man until a single gunshot was heard from inside the home. Investigators entered the home and found Henderson dead. The report said he was alone in the home when the shot was fired. On Monday, April 25th, Barr's body was escorted by fellow officers from the Lexington County Coroner's Office. South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster's released a statement about Barr on Monday. Peggy and I are praying for the family of Officer Barr and the KCPD during this tragic time. Officer Barr's dedication in the face of danger and his heroism in the name of protecting our people will never be forgotten. Police Chief Chris Cowan said a seven-hour negotiation with the suspect ended when the man took his own life. Mayor Elise Parton said Officer Drew Barr has been an important part of the Casey family since 2016. All of our Casey officers, our Casey team, and our Casey citizens mourn with Officer Barr's family. Cowan held another briefing. Barr was 27 years old. He would have turned 28 in June this year. Cowan explained Barr's career of service impacted the community, saying he was a firefighter and he was an EMT and he was a cop. Barr was a 2017 graduate of the Criminal Justice Academy. He had been promoted to the K-9 unit in 2020. His dog's name was Molly. Cowan said he cared about nothing else but serving his community. Officer Barr gave the ultimate sacrifice for us. Reactions from across the Midlands and beyond started to come in. Multiple law enforcement agencies expressed solidarity with the KC community. Sheriff Jane Kuhn and every member of the Sheriff's Department family would like to offer our heartfelt condolences to the friends at the City of KC as they mourn the loss of KCPD Officer Drew Barr. We stand with you as you support each other and Officers Barr's family. Officer Barr had been recognized by the department in 2017 after being shot. He was awarded the Medal of Valor and the Purple Heart. He served in the Lexington County EMS full-time as an EMT from 2013 to 2016. The Mineta Fire Department posted, "It is with a heavy heart that we say goodbye to one of our own." Drew Barr was a captain in our department. He was shot and killed in the line of duty with the KC Public Safety. Please pray for his family. The city issued an initial statement on his death saying, "At this time, our city, our KC Police Department, our officers, and our community mourn the loss of KC Public Service Officer, Public Safety Officer, Roy Andrew Drew Barr." And this, again, is from WIS-TV by Nick Neville. KC Police Officer Drew Barr, whose watch ended, was known to friends as a lifelong servant with a giving heart. They describe Barr as someone who was always putting others before himself. In a statement released after he was shot and killed, the KC Fire Department said of Barr, "You are a great friend to all who had the privilege to know you." Those friends came from all over, from the Rural Fire Department in Moneta, where he served the community, to the South Carolina State House in the capital city. "We lost a hero," Representative Seth Rose, representing Richland County, said. "We lost somebody who cared about his community." Rose came to know Barr through his work as an attorney. He's processing the loss of a man he said was fair and treated everyone with respect. "Through my state house duties, he and I would often talk about legislation he thought that would benefit first responders," he said. "We kind of bonded and connected on those issues. And I saw him probably 10 days before this tragedy. I woke up on Sunday morning, and I could not believe, and I'm still in shock and cannot believe this." Rose said he exchanged text messages with Barr and said he'll remember him for his good sense of humor and smile. Barr joined the Mineta Fire Department in his teenage years. He was an EMT with Lexington County EMS before joining the KC Police family. He previously survived getting shot in the line of duty shortly after joining the KC Police Department. He could have said, "You know what? This isn't for me. I don't want to continue down this path." But that, I know, just strengthened his resolve to help the community, Rose said. "I'm thankful that I got to know him." That sentiment is one being shared by many in the community following Barr's tragic death. Funeral services for Barr were held in his hometown in Batesburg, Leesville. So, Officer Barr, you are end of tour, end of watch. Stand down. We'll take it from here. Today's show is dedicated not only to Officer Barr, but to all the brave men and women that serve as first responders, be they law enforcement, firefighters, or emergency services. We also dedicate to them, to the men and women that serve in our military from the birth of this nation through today and into our hopeful future. We dedicate to each and every one of them this song by Todd Allen Herndon, "My Name is America." May God bless each and every one.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. I stand proud and free. others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America.
Listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio, SHR Media, Global Enlightenment Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, YouTube, Facebook, oh, a half a dozen other different places. Just go to the name of the show, Southern Sense, put a hyphen in the middle, southern-sense.com. And we're going through a little bit of a technical difficulty, and some stuff is being a little hinky, but we'll get it up and running. I'm your hostess with the least mostest, the Radio Chickadee Annie, along with my co-host, Curtis C.S. Bennett. Oh, man, Curtis, we have so much to talk about, so much to do, but there's something that I want to talk about some of the other guests later on. There was a court decision just 2 days ago out of Lafayette, Louisiana, that ruled the federal government cannot require Head Start, an educational facility typical for impoverished youth, to be vaccinated against COVID-19, nor can the federal government require a mask mandate. So in other words, for anyone to receive Head Start benefits, you know, your kids, you're poor, you need to go to work at McDonald's or wherever you're working, and you need somewhere to take care of your kids, Head Start is that place. Well, they were mandating these young kids that don't need the vaccine because how many have died from COVID? Zero, that are toddlers. But in order to go to that, they have to be masked and vaccinated, and this court in Louisiana struck it down. I'm sure that the Biden administration will appeal it, but I don't see the appeal going through at all. I would see that stand. Finally, it's about time. The courts are saying enough with these mandates and these masks. You can't force people to do things that they don't want to do. It's quite very, very simple. You know, if I don't want the jab, you can't force me to take it. And the courts are starting to side with us. We're seeing court case after court case. We had it with the Air Force, and we're seeing it with the medical staff. North Shore Hospital on Long Island just won. They lost that case. The employees won. We're seeing it now with the Head Start program. We're making headway here, Curtis. Did I lose Curtis? Tell me I'm here by myself. Hello, Curtis.
Yeah.
Are you back with
Can
us?
Can you hear me?
Did you unmute yourself? And we lost Curtis again. Curtis, you may have to dial it back in. I don't know what's going on.
What about now?
You back with us? We got you now. We got you now. You going good? No, we don't. Curtis, check your plug with for your mic. It could be loose.
What about now?
Okay. I got you now. Try again. This is live radio, folks. You can't make this up. Mm-mm. You can't simply make this up. Anyway, we'll try to get Curtis to figure out what's going on here. This ruling came from, will apply to the children as well as the faculty and staff of Head Start. So not just the kids, the faculty and staff, they don't have to submit to the mandate of the jab and the mask. So that's good. What happened was back in December of last year, teacher Sandy Brick filed a lawsuit in federal court, Louisiana, to stop the mandate and are represented by the national law firm Liberty Justice Center and Louisiana-based Pelican Institute for Public Policy. And the ruling permanently enjoining the vaccine and mask mandate in 24 states. Wow. So this does not just affect Louisiana, but 24 other states. And I wish they had listed the other states. I have a funny feeling South Carolina may be one of them. And it's not listed here. But that's a good thing.
It is. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yep, we got you now.
Okay.
We got you now.
Yeah, what I wanted to say was that in Florida, COVID was over for us like a year and a half ago, and the rest of the states didn't get the memo.
Well, it was the same here, but it's Governor McMaster is not as publicly before the cameras as often as Ron DeSantis is. He's not as you could say DeSantis is somewhat flamboyant, but that's in a good way, you know. It's not an attacky way. He's out there. He makes his point. He gets it across. And it's good. That is very good. McMaster's a little bit more laid back, and he only goes before the camera when he really needs to, which also is good. They each have different styles, but our state was opened a year and a half ago, easily. Mask mandates went out in public buildings. They stayed in federal buildings, of course, because the feds had their control over that. But he eased up as soon as he could. Florida eased, Texas eased, we eased, all around the same time. So this is good. Now, the appeal for this ruling for the mask mandate at the Head Start and the jab could be overturned by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, possibility. But President Biden earlier this week, you got to remember, publicly stated that the COVID-19 pandemic phase is over. So this may create enough pressure to not overturn the ruling due to the Democrats not pushing too hard for the ruling to be over just before the midterm elections. So this is a good thing. This is a very, very good thing. And Curtis has our first guest in on the line. Let me get my notes in order here. And let's get our guest unmuted and welcome onto the broadcast, Mia O'Day. Good afternoon, Mia. How are you today?
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. You've got a great book out. I sat down, and I'm an avid reader, but for me to at the point where I had to say, that's it, I've got to put this book down, otherwise I'm not going to get any sleep tonight. It's like about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and says, no. That's how great your book is. It is riveting. It's heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, but also very riveting. It's called Mia's Odyssey, Taking Back My Soul. And it's your true story of you being a child bride in an abusive marriage and how you were able to finally escape. And, man, I was trying to figure out after reading your book where to start in the interview. Well, let's first tell us about your background. What was your childhood like? And did anything in your childhood get you ready and prepared for what you would go through for the rest of your life?
I know my relationship with my family, because I left early, and it was rough between us, like sisters and my brothers, since they're like males and we're females. So it's kind of been always rough and dry and a little bit kind of lack of respect. Relationship with my father was really great. My mother was really barely involved in our lives as girls, but in the boys' life was really like, she was always there for them. I witnessed like a lot of abuse going on around me, like, you know, from the neighbors. I see how the relationship between the wife and the husband, I see her kind of get abused and witness it, like looking out from the window because the house was kind of across from each other. I hear her screaming. And as growing up, like I was in middle school, I wonder if that's going to happen to me when I grow up. Is that going to be me one day? My sisters went through the same situation with the abuse of their husbands.
Well, you grew up in Palestine with a Muslim family.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what a lot of people in the Western civilization don't realize is how subservient the women are. They're not even considered fully human. So they're treated in such a manner. And I've picked up my Newsmax magazine today. And I said, oh, I forgot this came in the mail. And I opened it up to the first story. And the first story struck a chord so hard in me that I couldn't believe that that's what I opened it up to. It was about Afghanistan and our pullout in there and what has happened to the women and society under the Taliban, where women are not, they don't even wear the hijab, which you had to wear. This is the full burqa. And they're not allowed to sit in the seat on a car. They're put into the trunk, into the luggage area. They're not allowed to sit in a seat because the seats in the cars are reserved for men. People don't understand how you could grow up that way and accept it. But you knew nothing else.
I really don't know, like, if fully from inside, like, really happy about it or they get adjusted to the way they get treated. Like, for example, that lady across the street, I remember I've seen her husband dragged her from her hair, pull her out, and put her in the back seat. And he had his son that was probably like 10, 11 years old sat on the front seat while his wife in the back seat crying. I'm not sure where they went. But in a lot of families and homes, women doesn't really count. Like, you walk behind the guy, your opinion doesn't really count much. You're just there for sexual pleasure, to give the man, give him kids, cook, clean. I myself went through that because I remember when my ex-husband told me, I did not marry you to love you. I just needed someone to give me kids and give him his pleasure and cook and clean for him. He was very straightforward about it. He was not lying.
Well, when you were growing up, did you have other hopes and aspirations?
When it comes to, like, personal life, you mean?
Were there things that you wanted to do? Did you have actually any vision of actually having someone to truly love you as a husband?
When I was growing up, I kind of thought, I always, you know, imagined how, like, romantic partners and things like that, how would it feel? Not so much, though, because I was still young. So we were not really allowed to watch even TV of, like, to inspire you to see what, you know, what is a romantic couple, what is real love, what is, like, what you get to see out there that probably will give you an idea. But, like, feeling-wise, it's like when you have a thumb over something. I didn't really feel much. But after I got married, I started kind of imagining how would it feel to really have, like, a really good partner that come home to, or to have dinner together, spend time together, to actually look forward to see that person. Because I did not have that with my ex-husband. I never really had the feelings for him, for how he treated me. But I did imagine a lot of, like, what would it be to have a really good partner? Like, yeah, that one, after I got married, probably I was maybe, like, 20-something.
Well, you got married at the age of 16. And one day your mom is sitting there with some of the other women, and now this is the first time you saw your ex-husband, Fayed. what went through your head when you were sitting there and thinking that this is who she's picking for my husband? What went through your mind?
I was really terrified. It's just, you have that feeling from inside where you really just can't hide that. Your intuition is like, I really don't really care for that person. It makes you nervous. It makes you on edge. You really, your heart is racing out of fear. It's just, it doesn't have a good feeling to be in the same room with him, not alone, to really know that you're going to be living with him. And when it comes to, like, physical, you know, being close to that person, I was not really open so much to that information, really know in depth about all that. So it seemed like I was really a lot in the dark.
You went through a horrific, horrific experience. But you had one thing that kind of like I look at it because, you see, I don't know if they told you, but I'm also a retired police officer. So dealing with domestic situations was something that, you know, I'm accustomed to. But to read your book and see what actually is going on behind the closed doors, I mean, we respond when we get called or it's brought to our attention, but we don't see what's going on the whole long time. We can guess. And your book, I just shook my head. It's like, how can someone stay in a relationship that long? But you had no out. In your mind, no matter where he moved you to, you had no escape. But you had the one benefit of you came to America and you began to see that people can live differently.
Yeah. Back overseas, when I had the kids, there was no way out. Like, I have asked my family, like, many times to really help me to go back home. It does not work to be with him. He's abusive to me and to the kids. They were not really a big fan of the idea of a divorce. They think it's kind of a shameful thing for a family. But, yeah, when it comes to being overseas, I was definitely felt like there was just no way out, to the point where I tried to commit a suicide, knowing that it's probably my only way out from his life. It was just, it seemed right at that time. But thought about it later, I felt really guilty because I know I had the kids. But it was a really dark spot to know that I can't get away from him. But coming to America, and actually the first person helped me to get knowledge is the police. So here in America, we really live different. The women have a voice. You can, we're not telling you what to do, but we're kind of teaching you, like, you can have your freedom. You can have the life that you really want. You don't need to be living like that. We live differently here. So for that, I do appreciate the knowledge that they give me. I didn't know that before. I thought it's the same.
Well, you know, you have a heart full of so much love, because here you are with a man that you obviously was impossible to live with, and I'm sure there's somewhere in there that you hate the man, but he had you bear 5 kids, and
yeah,
you had so much love in your heart to protect these children. Now, these were children that, you know, you were sexually assaulted in order to get you impregnated to have these kids for him, but he didn't love the kids. He definitely didn't love you, but you had so much love in your heart to protect them and raise them in such a wonderful fashion. I mean, how you are a strong person, I must say that.
Thank you.
And if you look at today's, it's not their fault. I was going to say, as in today's political environment where they push this pro-abortion, you show why there is beauty in all life.
Yeah, I do love my kids, and I love them from day one. And they gave me a lot of hope and inspiration to really keep going, no matter what was going on. It was just me and them. We're all trying to survive at the same time. Me and them were like friends. We were all witness each other get hurt and deal with it and cope with the day and be nervous when we know he's coming home. We witness all that together at the same time, to the point sometimes where we all sleep in one room on the floor and close the door and put a couch behind it. This, as a warning, gives us a minute to really collect our thought when we know he's there. But my kids mean the world to me. And till today, I will do anything for them, even though, you know, they're all still grown up, but I do. And during that whole situation with their father, I looked at them, and I don't even need to think twice that something needs to be changed for those kids. They can't live like that. It's not their fault of how the whole thing came to happen.
No, you also had the benefit of having a father that loved you, so you knew what a father's love was and what it should be.
I do. He was a really good guy. Appreciate anything and everything that I learned from him. We were actually, me and my father and my sisters, we were close, and, you know, we hang out, we have meals together often, we created our own board games, but my mom was never really involved for some odd reason.
Wow. It's been an absolutely amazing story. Mia's Odyssey, Taking Back My Soul. When you came to the United States, you know, you had never been on a plane. You had no idea what you were going to be walking into. What was your impression when that plane landed in Phoenix, Arizona, compared to where you left?
I was really nervous because it seemed like we were up there for a long time, and that tells me that I'm so far away from home. And to start new here in the country, everything was really different for me. So I was going through a lot of emotional and mental struggle. I didn't speak English. Everything is different here in America. And on top of that, I was with a man that I did not even want to look at. And
wow.
Him trying to keep close to me and get close. And I felt like I was dying every day. The whole process, the whole change all happened at the same time. Got married at 16, came to a different country. I never left my family's house. We were not even allowed to visit my friends, not alone to come to a different country, completely night and day different. So it was really hard. I struggled a lot.
Yeah, and here you are in a strange country. You're in the climate is completely different. The people dress different, eat different. You're thrown into this unwanted relationship, and this man was so abusive that he barely even took care of your physical needs, as in furniture or anything else like that. It was all about him, wasn't it?
It was always about him. I was not even allowed to watch TV, what I want, only the time that he is not home. But it was never about me. It's all about him. In his eyes, I am a property to him. It's like he paid to have me. I did not matter to him. My opinion, my feelings, whatever that I have felt as a woman, that was never meant anything. And he was honest about it. It never bothered him that he hurt me or upset me or sexually abused me and saw me crying in between his hands. It never bothered him.
And he didn't even want you to learn English. You had to sneak and watch TV when he wasn't there to try to learn English words.
At first, when we first got married, he was okay with the idea, and he was cooperating, and he tried to help me. But as time went by, it was just, I didn't have any of his support at all. He was just there. He worked. He does whatever he wants, and I just existed in his life when it's convenient for him. But later down the road, I learned English and got adjusted to everything.
Well, he went back and forth between the Middle East and the United States, moving you several times. But another blessing, I think, that went into your life is that when you got to Qatar, your children were enrolled in a British school. So they were coming home speaking English. And that helped you, but they also came with English ideas that are completely foreign and different than what you were under, what you knew. Is that when the light bulb started to go in on your head saying, I've got to find a way to get out of this?
But really, to get away from that man, it really started from day one. Like, I never really wanted to be with him. But after we went back to Qatar and I started having the kids, and, like, it just from there, things got worse. It was physically, mentally, emotionally, and sexually, like, everything. He did all that. And it's just from there I really felt like I really, really wish I could leave, but I knew back home I was not going to be able to go very far. If, let's just say, for example, I took the kids and ran away, eventually it's going to take me back where he was. They don't have like a lot of like a system to support the woman in a situation like what I was going through. So it doesn't matter how far I go, in the long run, they're going to find me and bring me back, and it might be even worse than before for trying to get out of his control.
Well, you were able to finally get away. You know, the police were called several times. You mm-hmm. were taken to a hotel where he ended up finding you there. Then eventually you escaped again to a shelter. How did that all come about?
It was a one day where the fight was really bad, and he decided that I'm learning too much in the country, and he wanted me to go back home. That day I took the kids, and we left, and we never came back. He did get arrested a couple of days before that, and they let him go. The police opened up my eyes that there is a shelter. I never knew. Like, I have no knowledge when it comes to shelters, where I come from. Your home is your home, and you don't leave it unless if you get married and vice versa. And it was definitely a different experience. But his plan wanted to send me back home. He did not want me to stay here. He just thought I'm learning too much being here, which is it will not go really well with what he believes.
When you first encountered a police officer, you asked a question, and I shook my head. I'm sure the same way the officer did. You said, "Are you going to take my children away?" Because your husband convinced you of what?
He told me, "You never work. You don't know how to live in the country here. They're really difficult to live by yourself here. You have no knowledge. And if you don't take care of the kids, they are going to take your kids and give them to the state, and they make money off of them." First thing came into my mind, well, I can't really leave and put my kids through that situation because, again, I'm not really knowledgeable when it comes to how to live in America. So I expressed my fear to the officer, and he told me that is not true. We don't do that. Now, if you don't take good care of your kids, then they are in danger, and there are certain things that a parent will do to put their kids in danger. Now, that's a different situation, but if you do what you're supposed to do and take good care of your kids, nobody can take them away from you, and I promise you that.
And that gave you the opportunity, that gave you the hope that there was an out, and you went through the shelter. You end up having a sixth child with another gentleman who also then, in the end run, took advantage of you too.
That is true, unfortunately. Yeah, it did happen, and it was hard because my daughter, during that time when we were going through the divorce, he took my daughter for 6 months, and she was gone without even having a clue where she would be. He kind of changed his phone number and disappeared. So I was homeless. I was going to school. I was caring for my other five kids, and my daughter that was 4 years old, it's like she disappeared off the face of the earth with him. And I was not able to get her for 6 months.
But how did you get yourself out of that? You got the daughter back. So how did you get yourself out of being homeless, and what are you doing now?
I don't give up. I am always out there trying to improve life for me and for my family. I went through a lot of resources between churches, organizations to help me out. I got help with food stamps, with medical for my kids. I learned a lot. I approach a lot of people. I'm not shy to really go and explain, hey, that's my situation. Where do I go? How can I, you know, get to the step where I can help me and my family to do better? And it wasn't easy. It was a really, really difficult journey. Like, any woman that's in my situation, I can never tell her, hey, you know what, it's really easy. It's a very difficult one. And when you have kids looking up to you for survival, as a mom, your heart is broken as it is. And to go through that, it's hard. But don't ever give up. It will work out. Just keep trying. Every day, get up with the intention that I'm going to try something different if yesterday did not work out. I have never given up. every single day I got up and tried something different to do better. And today I have accomplished a lot of my dreams. I bought my own home. I raised my kids really well, and I am so grateful to have them. I have a really good job. I established financial security, and I'm not even done. I am working on wanting to be running my own business, my own boss.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing story. I just want to ask a question here, Curtis. You had someone co-author this with you. Tell us about Mike Ball and how he got involved.
Mike Ball is an amazing writer. He's a really very sweet and thoughtful person, but he is a friend of a friend that I kind of heard about when I started the journey, and I mentioned I'm really working on wanting to write a book, and Mike Ball did write, he said he wrote a few books before, so my book was not his first one.
It's absolutely excellent. Curtis, ask the question. I've got one more before we have to let her go.
Okay. My question is, what is your overall experience and views now that you are here and away from that situation?
First of all, I want to say I'm very grateful to the country and everybody that came to my life and helped me be where I am today. My views, I wish I can help a lot of other women that are in the same situation. I know my sisters are going through that. I know it's everywhere. It's very common for women going through that abusive situation. But don't give up. That's all I can say. From my experience, I never give up. You got to keep trying. The days that does not work for you, get up the next day and try again. Do it for yourself. So not accept any abusive situation that put on you.
As such a wonderful, wonderful attitude. Now, what I want you to do is tell me what each of your kids are doing today, because when I read that, my heart just leaped for joy.
Okay, so my oldest son is a sheriff, and my second oldest is a Marine. He actually just got done his 4 years, and he's home. And my daughter is a social worker, and I have another son. He's 20 years old. He's in the Marine. He's in North Carolina. My daughter, she's about to be 22. She went back to school, and she wants to be involved in, like, the business kind of world. And my youngest one is...
Oh, Mia, you just dropped out.
I'm here.
Did we lose... Oh, no, I heard you got to the point was your youngest one, and then all of a sudden it went dead. So your youngest?
My youngest in high school.
Ah, all right. Now, I don't know if you know, but the Parris Island Marine Corps Recruit Depot is just a couple of miles away from my house right here. So your boys were probably here while I'm living here. So we could have possibly crossed paths. It's very possible.
Just
oh, man. Well, you've got your own website, Mia's Odyssey, that people can go to read more about you, read some of the excerpts of the book, and get the book, which is also up on Amazon, Mia's Odyssey, Taking Back My Soul. When you and Mr. Ball wrote this book together, was it able to help you work out a lot of your other emotions that may have been buried deep inside and say, all right, fine, I've gotten through this, and I've survived?
It definitely made everything seem like you're going through the whole life all over again. There was a lot of tears involved in the whole conversation between me and him. One thing, it's been always with me and I know it, but it kind of made it all over again feeling is that is a lot of what I went through, and I did rise above everything that went in my life, and I'm still standing up and got great kids out of that, and I am so grateful and so proud, and I'm not even done.
No, you're not. I can see you doing a lot, and I wouldn't doubt it if one day you run for office.
You may never know.
Yeah, you may never know. I mean, it is a very, it gives a lot of women hope which is one of the reasons why you said you wrote the book, is to give other women knowledge that they can get out of this situation. The problem is getting the books into their hands so that the abusers don't see it. But one of the things I was reading about your experiences in the woman's shelter, and the moment people say the word shelter, you think of a homeless shelter, but a woman's shelter is a lot different than a homeless shelter. There you're far more protected. And tell us about your experiences there.
I was very nervous. I was among a lot of people. It was me and my kids, all of us in one room. There was a lot of strict rules, you know, when you can go out and if you're working and not. To be among everybody, and I was new here, and didn't really know what to expect. And there was like a lot of process going on. They're trying to teach me how to apply for work, for insurance, for housing. So there was so much going on my plate. I was definitely in a very, very hard time to go through divorce, to be scared, to look at your kids, trying to get them back into school, to learn everything that was going on, all of it, like at the same time. So my mind was really beyond an overdrive. It was insane.
Well, you had a good social worker working with you that opened your eyes to all the things that are available in this bountiful country. And I have to say, my co-host, Curtis, was a social worker at one point of his in his career, besides being in the Navy.
A couple of times. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my
daughter
did.
Child Protective Services.
Oh.
Yep, Child Protective Services. And I've had to deal with young girls who were abused and abandoned and neglected, and it's very emotional.
It is very hard. It is heartbreaking. Yeah.
And
so,
boys,
yeah,
too. That's
yeah,
just as tragic, the boys.
Yeah, because
yeah,
one of the lines in the book that you also wrote in the excerpts was when your son Danny asked, why is it so cold around his father and so bright and sunny around you? And you had a wonderful response for him.
Yeah. Danny, that's my oldest. He's the cop. I mean, I remember when he said that. It was very heartwarming to know that he's really, with everything that was going on, he feels that way. And toward his father, I mean, he's struggled a lot with his father since he was the oldest one, and he always felt like he had to step in the middle to defend me, to the point one time where Danny was struggling when he was like maybe 7 years old with a math problem. So his father cornered him and started beating him up, and he told him, you're an idiot. You are never going to be anything in life. You're a loser. Like, he put him down all the way. And then when Danny graduated from the police academy, he came to me after all those years, and he said, see, Mommy, I am not an idiot. I am something. It broke my heart. I was like, I'm mad, being proud of him. But for him to remember that those whole years, and that
yeah,
day he comes to me and tells me that, it shattered my heart.
Well, you are an amazing woman. It's an absolutely amazing, amazing story. And I encourage people to get your book, Mia's Odyssey, Taking Back My Soul, up on Amazon, also at miasodyssey.com. It is an absolutely riveting story and one that should open up a lot of people's eyes about the truth about where you came from and what a lot of women in your situation have to go through daily. And these women are still out there suffering. God bless you, Mia.
Thank you
Take
so
care.
Much. I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
All right.
You're welcome. All right, check
we'll
it out.
We'll get you back along.
Absolutely. Mia O'Day, Mia's Odyssey, Taking Back My Soul. Check it out. It is a must read. We want to welcome back to the show Webster Barnaby, Florida State Representative for District 27. And Webster, your district has been redrawn, so now you're running for your seat in District 29?
Yes, that is correct, and I want to say good afternoon to all your listeners. Good afternoon, and I'm so grateful to be here. And my district has been redrawn, so it's going to be House District 29, which will be all of D-Land, all of Deltona, all of Osteen, Lake Helen, and the Spruce Creek fly-in for those that have airplanes that fly their planes into their backyards.
So
that's
now
the new district in Volusia County.
So did you lose an area and gain a different? How, I'm not sure how the Florida districts are drawn.
So 27, which was my district that I'm currently in, included New Smyrna Beach, Edgewater, Oak Hill, Deltona, D-Land, D-Barry, Lake Helen and Osteen, everything from the Atlantic Ocean to the St. Johns River. So basically the new district took away the coastline and compressed the inland areas together.
Wow. Oh,
interesting. Interesting. Now, you're originally from England. You worked in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And actually, I got to tell you, my parents lived down there from 94. And my dad passed away 10 going on 11 years ago. She just came up here 2 years ago after she had a stroke and just sold the house last year. So very familiar with the Virgin Islands. Easy to get lost. But how did you working in the U.S., especially in the Virgin Islands, change your views on politics and society going from England and Europe, European thinking, to what we are as Americans? How'd that change?
I don't think it's changed my thinking other than the fact that because of my upbringing with my parents, my dad being former British military and my mother being a midwife, taught us, from a biblical worldview. My parents were strong Christians, and they always helped us to understand that our worldview must be shaped by our biblical worldview. So if we have a proper understanding of creation and a proper understanding of human relationships and a proper understanding of progress as it relates to biblical thinking, then the human experience of civics and civil understanding of how civil government is supposed to run and how we are supposed to conduct ourselves as citizens of this great nation, then it becomes real easy and commonplace for me. I thought, for me personally, that the British system was good because it taught me a lot of discipline. And the Caribbean experience was kind of laid back in St. Thomas for 4 years. But now being in Florida since 1991, I felt it was a duty and a responsibility for me to not only be here and enjoy the beauty of liberty and freedom, but to try to give something back, to contribute by serving in public office, starting with serving as the PTA president for my children's school, and then going on to become a city commissioner in 2012, and 2 years ago being elected as a state representative.
Wow. I was looking up and doing a little research. You know me, Webster. You know, I don't come in here blind, and most of it is coming off the top of my head. But I was surprised to see that you had a scorecard from Americans for Prosperity that was an A+. Wow. Amazing.
Well, I'm grateful for an A+ rating. I am a pro-business person. I'm a free market enterprise guy. And I don't just talk about it. I try to exemplify that in everything that I'm doing, both as a businessman and as a Christian leader in my community. Very important for me to represent Christ with excellence. So anything short of an A+ is a failure for me in everything that I do. I want to excel as an A+ servant leader in my community.
Well, Curtis, I know you have a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, as we all know, we saw England mourn the death of the Queen. For most of us, the only one we ever knew during our lifetime. What are your thoughts on her having once been a British subject?
Well, I'm glad you asked the question because I was really sad that Her Majesty, the Queen Elizabeth, passed away. For me, who had pledged my allegiance to the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. I fully understood that I was once a subject and a loyal, faithful subject. I believe that the passing of Queen Elizabeth is a momentous occasion in world history because she had served for so long, not just England, but the Commonwealth and so many nations around the world that had a British influence. And we can see that there is clearly a change in the atmosphere of leadership in the world today. It was the author John Maxwell who coined the phrase that everything rises and falls with leadership. And we often hear the quote that elections have consequences. And nothing is more evident that the election of Joseph Rubino Biden created consequences that were unknown and untold. To this day, the consequences of Mr. Biden being in the White House is affecting nations around the world in a very negative way, simply because the failure of leadership that's coming out of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Nothing is more glaring than the failure of leadership on the question of immigration. And today on this call, because I am a naturalized American who came to the United States legally, who waited 11 years with a green card legally until March the 5th of 1998, when I raised my right hand and pledged my allegiance to the United States, I did it legally. And it is absolutely astounding to me and an absolute affront to people like myself who emigrated legally that the president and the vice president have failed to address this major problem that we have with millions of people from all over the world coming down to the southern United States border and literally just walking across into the United States using all the services that hard-working taxpayers are paying for, and abusing the system with crime, abusing the system with fear, breaking down social barriers and opportunity for hard-working, freedom-loving Americans. It's wrong on so many levels. And the politicians in Washington, shame on them for standing by and not doing enough to bring attention to the situation. I'm proud to have been one of the legislators in the Florida legislature who voted to appropriate $12 million so that we can deport and repatriate those individuals that would dare to come to the state of Florida. And my job as a lawmaker, as a member of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Subcommittee, is to make sure all illegals are either deported or sent back to their countries of origin.
Well, now here I have a question for you. Yeah, you did. Because one of the questions I had written on my page is that you're a legal immigrant, was about DeSantis being sued by these migrants that he flew up to Martha's Vineyard, which is a sanctuary city. And as I understand the lawsuit,
they might as well put my name on that lawsuit as well, because I voted for that bill that he signed into law to deport those people and send them to Martha's Vineyard.
Well, that's the question I was going to ask you. Are you going to be part of that lawsuit? Are they going to go after you? Because you also said you're part of that commission that came up with the policy to deport also. So I'm seeing you in their sights.
Yeah, bring it on. Bring it on. I've got nothing to fear. I'd love to be able to stand up in court and defend that one.
It's funny, though, because here you've got these sanctuary cities that always said, oh, yes, send your illegal aliens over to us. You know, we'll take care of them. But suddenly when we do that, when they go into Baltimore, when they go into New York City, when they go into Martha's Vineyard, when they go to San Francisco and L.A. and Chicago, all of a sudden it's panic. And now they're inundated with these aliens, illegal aliens. And wait a minute, someone has to pay for these services for them.
Right. They're virtue signaling. They are virtue signaling that, look at us, we are virtuous to take the aliens, but if 50 of them were to show up, they call the National Guard and say, we've got an emergency. But it's not an emergency when we've got millions streaming across the Rio Grande, coming from all corners of the earth. It's a major problem. And Governor DeSantis has banned sanctuary cities. Let me just say this. In 2021, Governor DeSantis deployed state law enforcement agents to help secure the southern border, becoming the first state to answer Texas and Arizona's call for assistance. Now listen. Under Joe Biden, dangerous drugs like fentanyl are freely flowing across the southern border, creating a nationwide drug and opioid crisis. Fentanyl is now the top killer of adults aged 18 through 45. To combat the crisis, Governor DeSantis increased the sentence for trafficking fentanyl and added methamphetamine to the list of drugs eligible for life in prison for those who sell them and causes the loss of life. First Lady Casey DeSantis just launched a statewide public messaging campaign to inform our public in our state of the dangers of fentanyl and educating youth on the life-altering effects of drugs use through her. The facts are Your Future Initiative. The initiative reinvents how substance abuse is taught in schools from Just Say No to Drugs to Just Say No to Drugs, and here's why. We are stopping violence. Riots, and we're deploying the Florida State Guard. In fact, in 2022, the governor reestablished the Florida State Guard to enhance Florida's emergency response. The governor secured $10 million in the 2022 through 2023 budget to support 400 civilian volunteer members of the State Guard. How about that?
Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. You know, that's what we need. More states, more red states to come to the front of the fight and say enough is enough. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I was proud to not only be a co-sponsor of the anti-riot bill, but also I spoke on the floor of the House regarding the anti-riot bill, and I told the entire body in Tallahassee that if people come to Florida and they riot and they steal and they break into people's property, we will not give them bail. We will arrest those individuals and lock them up. So in Florida, you're not going to come down here and play games as in Portland and Wisconsin. We ain't Portland. We ain't Wisconsin. And we ain't Milwaukee. And we're not New York or California.
Nope.
State of Florida, we're going to remain the free state of Florida as long as this representative, Webster Parnaby, and Governor DeSantis will be in the leadership role. And that's what we are. We're leading because we're leaders.
Well, one of the things that you're got yourselves involved in, because you said you were, you know, in charge of the school board, is education. And there's always been this push in one form or another to put CRT into our education system. We also have it where kids as young as 3, 4, 5 years old are being indoctrinated in adult sex, in abnormal sex. They now have this new grammar, you know, your pronouns. If you don't adhere to the pronoun police, you're going to get thrown in the pronoun jail. It's gotten out of control. We have lost complete control of our education system. Isn't it time we get rid of Fed Ed and bring it back down to the state level?
Absolutely. You know, I'm proud to tell your audience this afternoon that I was a co-sponsor of the parental rights bill. This is the bill where we banned classroom instructions on sexual orientation and gender ideology for K through third grades. I also was part of the bill that signed into law the Parental Bill of Rights, as I said, prohibiting the state or any other governmental entity from infringing on a parent's ability to decide what is best for their child. We also prohibited school districts from force masking students. We also required that school districts notify parents if there is a change in their child's mental, emotional, or physical well-being. And in all of this, just to wrap it up, we ensured school districts are transparent in the selection of curriculum materials, including library books and reading materials. Years ago, while I was the Parents Teachers Association president for Trinity Christian Academy, I was challenged in Volusia County because they had a school book on world religion in Volusia County schools. And in this world religion book, they had an entire chapter dedicated to the teaching of Islam and how to become a Muslim. And mm-hmm. I went to see the principal of the school, and I said, how dare you have a school book that has an entire chapter dedicated to the teaching of Islam and how to become a Muslim? And I said, there is not so much as one page to explain to children the world religion, the number one world religion of Christianity. I said, you guys have relegated Christianity to a footnote. Mm-hmm. And I said, I need this textbook to be taken out of the schools, and I want it reprinted equal footing. Just as much as you've given Islam an entire chapter, we need an entire chapter with the teaching of Christianity. I'm not asking you to take out the teaching of Islam. I said, matter of fact, is as a Christian and as a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, I want children to learn about Islam. I want children to learn about all the other religions. But then again, I also want them to learn about Christianity, because I know with great confidence that if children are given the choice and they see the choices out there, Christianity will be the preeminent choice made for anyone if people are at least given the choice. And do you know, they said to me at the time, they thought that I was going to tell them to just take out Islam. And I said, no, I'm not attacking Islam. See, as Christians, we have to be supremely confident of our faith and supremely confident of what our Lord did. He's the only one that is the resurrection and the life. And I know that. And because I know that, I'm not afraid of the other religions. I'm just saying, if you're going to teach children about religions, make sure Christianity is taught as well.
Well, they have been going after Christianity, trying to alter it. Here in South Carolina, we've gone through a major lawsuit that went up through to the Supreme Court, got kicked back down. Out of 25 churches, I believe 8 of them have lost their property, because we had at one point been enjoined with the Episcopal Church. We're Anglican, and which you know is a lot more conservative than the Episcopal faith. So after they went a little too far left, we said, no, we're going to now separate, take our properties, and walk away and say, have a nice day. So they sued us. And I'm glad that we maintained ours, but 8 other churches lost theirs. But this came across, and this was in the Epoch Times just this week, that a Texas church had a bingo night, which was a drag queen bingo night. I mean, why? Yeah. But wait. That's okay, because the drag queen bingo starts at 8:30 in the evening, and children are not allowed. You've got to be over the age of 18 to attend. But still. A drag queen bingo, but one of the drag queens was involved in plotting a school shooting in Texas. The shooting was prevented. It never went through, but this was one of the drag queens this church was going to have to do bingo. Now, why are you having a drag queen show at a church?
Yeah, this type of abomination has happened in large part because, sadly, many church leaderships across all denominations, to be frank with you, have, in my opinion, completely backslidden in terms of their respect for doctrine and their respect for the gospel. And so they've lost the third from the faith. They've completely erred from the faith. And because of that, all hell is broken loose. And so this type of abomination happens even in churches. It's very, very interesting and very, very sad that plurality has created a lot of problems throughout our churches and our denominations. When you have plurality, you take away moral absolutes, and you need moral absolutes. Everything cannot be plural. You cannot live in the gray. There has to be some black and white. There has to be some right and wrong. And this plurality, where anything goes and everybody's got their truth, this is where we're getting ourselves into trouble, because everyone doesn't have their own truth. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father," Jesus said, "except through me." And there's, you know, all roads don't lead to heaven. There's only one way to heaven. And Jesus says, "I am the way." And you enter in at the straight gate. We cannot go on the broad street, because many go on the broad street, and a few will find that the real access to heaven is at the straight gate. There's a right way and a wrong way to do things. And leaders have to have the courage and the integrity to tell people in love, the truth in love. And I hope that your listeners can respect the fact that I've tried to educate you and try to speak the truth in love. Not my truth, the truth of the one and only true king. It's interesting that, as I mentioned, the queen and the new king of England, there is one king that we all serve, whether we like it or not, and it's King Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
So I'm proud of you, my Anglican sister from South Carolina.
Well, I have to admit, I was raised Italian Roman Catholic, and unfortunately, yeah, I saw certain things going on in the church, especially when I was a police officer, that I just said, no, this is not the true way. And when I found the Anglican Church here in South Carolina, my husband and I felt like we were at home. And so we've got a good solid congregation, a good solid diocese, we were very happy. Unfortunately, my husband, well, he's buried there now, but I will be one day.
Oh, God bless you. God bless
you. But we have to stay true, because what we have in our faith also translates into what we do throughout all of society, whether it is with legislation or whether it is with your business. It all unites into one whole being. It's not just you separate the religion from business, you separate the religion from education, you separate religion from legislation. No, the morality, the laws that were passed, and the teachings of the gospel, bring it all together.
Amen. Amen. You know, I tell you, I just love the Lord, and I love people like you and CS that love Jesus. We're all part of the body of Christ in this beautiful kingdom, this great kaleidoscope of people that fall in love with him. Because now that we're going to know each other as we are known, one day we should all be together eternally, with no labels, and just worshiping the King of Kings together. Can't wait for that day.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Webster.
Absolutely.
Who are you facing in November? What can you tell us about your opponent?
So I'm facing an attorney by the name of Rick Carr. This gentleman is a strong Democrat socialist, and Mr. Carr works for the law firm of Cole Cobb Cole, and he has a strong Democrat pedigree. His father served as a Democrat in the Florida legislature and actually ran for governor for the state of Florida. So I'm taking it real serious on November the 8th. I need everyone's support to, for personally, people that's listening to this call can support me directly by visiting my website, votebarnaby.com. www.votebarnaby.com, and simply go online and click the donate button and anything that God puts on your heart. Anything that God puts on your heart, just go ahead, please make the donation at votebarnaby.com and help me to carry the banner for our Lord, because I believe righteousness exalts a nation and sin is a reproach to any people, and we need leaders with integrity to stand up and hold the banner of righteousness. When I sponsored the fetal heartbeat bill in the legislature, I was told that as a freshman, I'm not allowed to do that. And I said, excuse me, I'm a lawmaker. I'm allowed to do whatever God called me to do. So without equivocation, I sponsored the fetal heartbeat bill. And although it didn't pass, we did get a 15-week ban on abortion. But I want them to stop abortions completely, because I believe life begins at conception. And so I'm not stopping. We save and rescue the lives of every child that is trying to be developed in their mother's womb.
Absolutely. And that's a huge amen to that one. But then again, you have people that want to be governor in the state of Georgia that believes that that the heartbeat you hear at 6 weeks on the child, that's just all smoke and mirrors. That's not real. I mean,
yeah,
how many?
I heard that.
Yeah.
Stacey Abrams said that it's appalling. It's just like Val Demings, who's running for senator in Florida, said that rape is murder, incest is murder, but abortion is not murder. Well, excuse me, abortion is murder, okay? Abortion is the killing of a human life. And if you're in a car accident and you absolutely were to kill somebody who was pregnant in a car accident, they call it a double homicide, because that individual was pregnant, not with a fetus, but with a living life, a human life. So they have not changed that judicial description of a woman who's pregnant. It's still called a double homicide. So how to get around that? They're doing pretzels trying to figure a way how to get around that, but they cannot.
They cannot. Well, your website is votebarnaby.com. There's a link to it on the show page, so people can go there, click on the link, make a donation to your campaign, and give you some support, even if they don't live in the state of Florida or your district. But if they do know people, they can contact their friends and family that do live in your district. Now, your District 29, is that red, or is that purple? Is it blue?
So the last time I ran, it was purple, but then I won my seat 2 years ago, and I took it from a purple to a red district. So it's now considered red, leaning purple. However, because of the redrawing of the new district, we do have a lot of Democrats being close to Stetson University in D-Land.
Oh, wow.
A lot of old... So I can't take anything for granted. It's old Dixiecrat land down there in D-Land.
Okay. Well, Webster Barnaby, we wish you a lot of luck, and God bless in the hard work you do, sir.
Well, praise the Lord. I'm just honored to be on this call with you and my dear friend, C.S. Bennett. What a great American patriot. And I love what you guys are doing through this radio medium, educating Central Florida. And we're proud to have you here on this show.
We love what you're doing.
Thank you, Webster. And you have a blessed weekend. We're telling people to go to votebarnaby.com.
That's right. Votebarnaby.com. Thank you again. It's been an honor and a privilege. And anything I can ever do for you guys, you just only have to ask, and you got it.
Just
win.
Thank
you so much, sir. Yes,
amen.
Win.
Ben, baby, just win.
All right.
Webster Barnaby. All right. Thank you. We're going to win.
Great.
Okay,
great.
Webster Barnaby. Check it out, votebarnaby.com. We have, I know I'm going to probably mess her name up, but I'm going to do the best I can, Amania Celesti. Did I say that correct?
You were very close. It's Amania, Amania Salas.
Amania Salas. Well, welcome to the show. You are known as a conservative poet on YouTube, and people can find you at Twitter by typing in your name, and my eyeglasses are messing
hyphen
up on me.
Last name.
Hyphen.
First name,
yes.
Hyphen, or,
hyphen,
you know, the last underscore last name Salas
on
Twitter.
Because I was looking on this. If I look at my sheet of paper, I see the underline. If I look at my computer screen, it looks like dot, 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 dot. So, oh, man, you have a very interesting background coming from Haiti and then living in the Turks and Caicos and then coming here to America.
Yes.
What was your impression when you go from the Caribbean to being dumped into New Jersey? Boy.
Well, at one point, you know, Jersey was okay, but growing up, I didn't realize how bad things really were. But it was as I grew up, as I started to get older, I started to see what it really was. And, yeah, being dumped in there is a good way to put it.
You were at what, around Jersey City?
Newark, New Jersey, Essex County, Union County. That particular area, I went to school in Jersey City at St. Peter's University. So I traveled back and forth into Jersey City a lot.
Wow. Well, my mom came from Monmouth County, the Red Bank area. So it was a lot nicer than Newark.
Yes, it was. I've been to Red Bank, and you're right. The area that I was compared to what Red Bank is, night and day, very, very different. You would think you were probably on a different planet. You know.
And then you moved to Florida. Now, you talk about going from one type of the world to a different to back to something completely different. Wow.
Well, growing up, starting in Haiti, I left there very young, so I don't really know too much about. I did visit back in 2010, but, you know, I'll start there. I started my life there in the Turks and Caicos Islands is where I grew up and moved to the States when I was about early teens. That's when I moved there. And it was interesting growing up in the area that we were, East Orange, New Jersey. And I lived just walking distance from the high school, and we got teased a lot, you know, because, you know, we were immigrants, we were migrants here. And so it was tough growing up, but I started to learn the ropes and learn how to do things. I spoke English very well from being in the Turks. From there. So I blended in. And then as I grew up, I started to see what New Jersey was really about. And I had it in my mind that I didn't want to live here for the rest of my life. And so I started to put plans into motion, you know, mentally starting to dream up where I would like to end up. And I dreamt of Florida. And so I made the move here in 2016.
Wow. And now you serve as the Secretary of the Florida Republican Assembly, but you also work with Black Voices for Trump. You know, tell us about that.
I worked with Black Voices in for the 2020 elections. It was a great, great experience. We actually, our leader of that group was Nico Carroll, and he
Jennifer
did a great
Carroll's
job.
Son.
Yes, yes. Nico did a great job of getting us organized, getting us on the ground as far as getting to the rallies and flag waving in the area, walking the neighborhoods and just getting the message out there for President Trump and, you know, what we were just trying to educate, you know, the people in this area. So it was a great experience having that and just going to the rallies and just being on the ground doing the work.
Right. Well, now, one of the things you do is you're quite a prolific writer. You do these little notebooks. Tell us about them.
Oh, yes. Notebooks, journals, and planners. I sell them on Amazon and also through my website. But I've been a writer my whole life. I just love reading and books and things like that. And so I just wanted to find a way to start to create these things. I'm not, I haven't written a book like Mr. Bennett, but I'm well on my way starting with my journals, and then I'll gradually move on. But I do love it. It's a great creative way to bring these things out, and I just enjoy that. So that's part of my business that I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because on the show page here, I've got your picture up, but next to it is your Florida Republican Assembly home of the Frederick Douglass Republicans notebook. I love it.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We love Frederick Douglass. And, we go with that because a lot of people, a lot of them are Democrats, and they don't realize that Frederick Douglass was a Republican. And all of the things that he went through and he did in his life, when people hear Frederick Douglass, they automatically, pay attention. And so that's why we call ourselves the Frederick Douglass Republicans, because it's a softer intro into what we're trying to do, because we want to really communicate with people. We don't want to push people off. And so Frederick Douglass is a great way to get the conversation going.
It is. I want to change a little bit on the subject because just yesterday, and I love this, Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced articles of impeachment against Joe Biden. Did you get a chance to read any of these?
I did not. This is news to me right here. No.
Yes, she proposed House Resolution 1362, and she writes in detail the case against President Joe Biden, stating that he abused the power of the office of the vice president, enabling bribery and other high crimes and misdemeanors by allowing his son to influence the domestic policy of a foreign nation and accept various benefits, including financial compensation from foreign nationals in exchange for certain favors. That's the first one. She writes, the evidence of widespread knowledge, corruption, and collusion on behalf of the Biden family with foreign nationals is clear and compelling. And she goes, the third one, as vice president, Joe Biden was the senior Obama administration official overseeing anti-corruption efforts in Ukraine. And then she goes on through stating all the other instances in that one paragraph. And then she goes, in 2016, Ukraine's top anti-corruption prosecutor, Viktor Shokin, had an active and ongoing investigation into Burisma and its owner at the time. At the time, Hunter Biden continued to serve on Burisma's board of directors. So she ties him in with that. Then she writes, during his father's vice presidency, Hunter Biden built many business relationships with foreign nationals, receiving millions of dollars from foreign sources. President Biden gravely endangered the security of the United States and the institutional government through blatant nepotism. He enabled his son to influence foreign policy and financially benefit. And then she names the Chinese Communist Party, the Russian oligarchs, and so forth.
Wow.
So she's 6 items in the article of impeachment. This broke yesterday. See?
Wow.
I'm on top of things.
Well, I'm glad you are, because I did not even read that. But, Marjorie Taylor Greene, we need more representatives like her, because she is what we need. And if we had 10 of her, 20 of her, maybe this country would be better. Maybe our party would be better. Maybe, our government would be better.
Oh, definitely. And one of her strongest cases is going to be that video of Joe Biden threatening these officials over there about getting rid of the judge that was overseeing the case against his son.
Mm-hmm.
He told him, you have so many hours to get rid of that judge, or, you're not getting the funding. that you're looking for. And, I mean, he brags about it, braggadocious and everything, but you don't see that too much on TV because the left-leaning media, they're trying to protect this guy, you know.
Yeah, they don't play any of that.
Yeah.
No. They don't play any of it. Nobody would have a clue. They don't know anything about what's going on with Hunter Biden and his crack pipe situation and you know, his nasty business dealings overseas and all of these things. The American people, they don't know because the news media hides it. The mainstream media protects Biden and his family.
That's right.
At all. But can you imagine the Trump people, the Trump family, how that would go?
No, look what they're doing already. The New York Attorney General filing a civil lawsuit against Trump and his children for, dear me, overvaluating his properties when he was applying for a loan. Yeah,
wow.
But you're in the real estate business, if I remember correctly, aren't you?
Yes. I used to be in real estate sales or property management. Yes.
No one ever overvaluates their property, do they? Nah.
No. You have an appraiser come out, and if the appraiser, they tell you what your property is worth based on the comparables in the area. That's how it's done. So I don't get where they're coming up with all of this. Just another way to try to rope the man, again, trying to lock him up, trying to, you know, tear him down every which way they can because, you know, orange man bad always, and this is their thing, and this is just another Russia way to try to take Trump down.
Well, in the interim now, you have President Biden and a lot of our politicians on the left, Maxine Waters, Nasty Pelosi, and others, bad-mouthing those that are Republicans, those that are Trump supporters, and who could forget that infamous speech Biden gave with that huge dark red background, MAGA bad,
my God.
MAGA
that
evil.
That was so scary.
Now we have over in Nebraska, I believe it was Nebraska, where an 18-year-old boy lost his life because he got into a political debate with someone that was on the opposite side of the political spectrum, in so much that the boy had called his mom in fear of this gentleman. His mom was aware of who this man was, said, "I'm coming to get you." Obviously, she knew this guy was a bad dude. So she goes to get her son to keep him safe. Now this man comes and starts chasing this kid, runs him over in an alley, leaves the scene of the crime, goes home, then decides to call the police, goes back to the alley. The kid's dead. He goes back home.
Oh, my God.
And when he gets arrested for killing the kid, he admits to the police and to the court that he did it because he thought he was a right-wing Republican. Because he was a Republican. Now, imagine if that kid was a Democrat and it was a Trump supporter that ran him over.
Wow.
This would be blasting front-page news, but it's not.
No, it's not.
And the 41-year-old man gets released on $50,000 bond. And you know most states, all you have to do is put up 10% of the bond. So on $5,000, this guy walks out, and this kid's life is not even worth a mention anywhere. And the only place you see this would be on Newsmax. And I think Fox News had something on it also. But this is what our government is doing to us. When you have Biden saying, "Oh, wait a minute, if they're Republican, if they're Trump supporters, they're evil. They are the terrorists. They are the fascists." Wait, where's this coming from?
I don't know what we're facing. It's true. This is what we're facing. And these people, they hate the country. They hate the people. I mean, we can't have law and order in this country because they're letting criminals out on you know, $10,000 bond to go out there and wreak havoc on the American people. I mean, people aren't even safe. Look at what's happening to California. Look at all these, you know, look at Chicago. Look at all these places. They're not upholding the law.
No,
people are running
and in New
around.
York, New York, no bail. you arrest, it's a revolving door. So what's the point of even arresting the person?
Yeah.
It's a revolving door. But do you see a red wave coming this November? I mean, a lot of pundits are going, well, don't get your hopes up too high.
Well, I say we do have a red wave coming, but in order for us to secure that red wave, we have to be on the ground, especially with our candidates. We have to be knocking doors, you know, making phone calls, ensuring that red wave, not just sit around and say, oh, yeah, we're going to have this red wave, but yet nobody's actually doing anything. And then come after the election, if they decide, you know, if it goes well on the 8th, and, you know, we don't have to keep counting until next year to figure out who actually won, we'll realize, you know, yeah, a red wave is coming, but we have to be on the ground. We have to do the work. We have to help these candidates.
Amania.
Absolutely. Go ahead, yeah. Curtis.
Tell us about the mayor of Orlando and what he is trying to do and what party affiliation he is with and what you and others want to do to stop him.
Okay, so Jerry Demings is the mayor here in our area, and he's actually Val Demings' husband, all right? So he... They're the Clintons of this area. We like to make jokes, but it's actually not jokes. They are literally the Clintons of this county, Orange County. So they run this town. And so he is looking to raise taxes, and they're calling it a penny tax. You know, that way people aren't, you know, oh, it's only a penny. It's not really going to be that much, so we're going to just go, you know. But what they're not realizing is it's a regressive tax, and that's really going to take away from the low-income earners and not really the high-income earners. It's a regressive tax, and that's what they're trying to do. And so we went out and had a press conference on Wednesday against it. We had a very nice turnout. We actually made the front page of the Orlando Sentinel. I haven't had a chance to read the story just yet, but we did make the page. So the word is out there that we're not going to sit back and let Jerry Demings and, you know, his commissioners do this to the people, because right now we're in a recession. And to add on to more tax, I mean, we're paying out the nose for gas and for food and for everything else. Now you want to add another tax? It's just not right. And so that's what we're standing up for, against this tax, to say no. Voting on that on November 8th. It is on the ballot for November 8th. So we're saying no on the vote.
Well, we've got something very similar coming up here also. They want to put what they call a penny tax. Actually, it's a 1% tax. So 1% tax on every goods and services you purchase. It means everything goes up 1%, including your utility bills, your smart device subscriptions, whatever you purchase, it's going to go up 1%. And if what we have to do is, I'm going to be doing this in my county, we have to put it before the voters just before election. And I did it last year on the weekend before Election Day. And we killed the tax in the last ballot. I'm going to do the same thing on this one. Kill it. Just make sure I hit all the ads, and I took half-page ads out of my own pocket and all the major papers. So it got blasted everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do that. And they're using the excuse of green space. We want to preserve green space, but we already have within our county government a program to preserve green space. And the county has this in place, so you don't need to charge us additional. So they're going to turn around, get rid of the old department, put this new monstrosity in place, and it's going to cost us $100 million in taxes to preserve green space when we're not even coming close to that. We still have, I think it's like $18 million in the pot to purchase green space. And they add to it every year. So we have it in place. But no. Penny tax, green space. And those are the key words they're going to use. And we've got to find a way to fight that.
Those are the trigger words. That's what's going to tell people, oh, it's for the environment. Oh, climate change. We've got to save the planet. Oh, I'll be okay with it. Oh, it's only a penny. It's not going to be that much. Oh, you should be able to do it. And they guilt you into thinking, you know, if you don't do this thing, if you don't agree, then you're somehow against the environment. You're somehow against, you know, progress or whatever they put together. And you're right. It's a 1% tax, and it's a lot. Especially in these times.
It is. But, you know, something else that the Republicans did come out with, and again, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I believe, is the one that presented this. The Republicans come out with a new commitment to America. Now, Newt Gingrich, this came out just about an hour before going on air, looked at it, read it over, and he said it was stronger than what he did in 94. And it's a small little pocket, you know, thing that you can put in your pocket, and they're going on the economy, national security, a future that built on freedom, and a government that's accountable. And they have bullet points, you know, fight inflation and lower the cost of living, make America energy independent and reduce gas prices, strengthen the supply chain and end dependence on China. And then for security, secure the border and combat illegal immigration, reduce crime and protect public safety, defend America's national security, and then on freedom, make sure every student can succeed and give parents a voice. That's a big one. Achieve longer, healthier lives. Confront big tech and demand fairness. And then for accountability, preserve our constitutional freedoms, hold Washington accountable, restore the people's voice. And under each bullet has what they're going to say that they're doing. I think it's powerful. I think it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, sounds great. Sounds like what we need to do. Get this country moving again. Get us back on the right track. Yeah.
All right. Curtis, go ahead and ask your next question because I'm trying to get a post up from here that Facebook is giving me a hard time with. Huh.
Okay. Tell us about some of your, and I'm talking about your district, some of the things you guys are trying to do to help the governor get reelected, like wave signing or having events or fundraisers.
Yeah, so right now what we have a location where we've set up shop and the governor's office, Rubio's people, and this is with the Florida Republican Assembly. That's one of the organizations that I work with at this time. And so we have a call center set up there so everybody can come in, and we're not just dealing with the governor and Marco Rubio, but we're dealing with also the local runners. So for our District 10, Calvin Winbush, we're making calls for him, and the state reps that we have running, Nate Robertson. And we also have several others that we are working with making phone calls. Scotty Moore, he's running in District 9 for the congressional seat. He actually did a very, very good, he had a great turnout. His numbers were great. And we're also calling for Carolina Amnesty. She's running District 11, I believe, for State House. So is it 11? No, she's, I think it's 45. She's there for State House. So we've got a lot of great, strong Republican runners, and so we're trying to get them over the threshold, get them through that, sign waving, phone calls, door knocking, whatever it takes to be, and we, you know, you can be out there doing all these things, but if we're not on the ground, if we're not getting the numbers from the people, you know, it's not even going to work, you know, so that's what we're doing, and we need more volunteers. I mean, you can make phone calls from anywhere. We use the Sidekick app, and you can be at home making phone calls, whatever you can, you know, so that's what we're doing.
Wow. People have to get involved, otherwise we're not going to win any of these elections, and it's amazing that you got yourself so well organized. God bless.
Yes, our president, Lou Marin, he is a great leader, and you know, he's been able to really gather up the troops, you know, to do this thing. So we're very, very excited for that, and we're excited for the work that we're doing. And again, we're wanting that red wave, but we've got to secure the red wave, you know, for these candidates.
Now, Lou Marin, that's not Typhoon Lou, is it?
Typhoon Lou, yes.
I have not talked to that man in I don't know how long. Oh my goodness!
Yes.
The last time I saw him. Last time I saw him, he had that We Are American, the organization. He was up here in Charleston aboard the aircraft carrier. Matter of fact, I have a picture with Herman Cain. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you have to tell him.
He is the one
Lou,
in the
I said hello. You have to tell
I
him. He's got to get a hold of me. Oh, absolutely. What a small world. Small
it
world.
Is.
Catherine Lou.
Yeah. Typhoon Lou. He's our fierce leader. He knows so much about politics and on the ground. And we would love for Lou to be out there, you know, but he's behind the scenes. He's our guy behind the scenes. And so he's doing great work here with us in Orange County, teaching us newcomers how this thing is done to continue to fight for our country and to continue to get the conservative viewpoint and our causes out there, you know. So, Typhoon Lou.
Well, is there a website people can go to give support?
They can check out our FRAOC.org. That's the Florida Republican Assembly website. And on there, we have all of our events that we have coming up. We have our resources and our meetings and all kinds of things are on there. So, yeah, FRAOC.org is the Florida Republican Assembly website.
AOC. Yeah, all right. Curtis, make sure that she gives you Typhoon's contact or give my contact to her to give to a Typhoon.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And she also mentioned one of our friends that have been on the show quite a bit, and that's Calvin, Colonel Calvin Wimbush.
Wimbush, yeah, who was just on just a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Which is a surprise call. We didn't expect him. He just called in.
Wow. Wow, but he's there with us. He's actually, we made the front page, and he's right there. I'm looking at the paper right now, and there he is.
Great.
Give him our regards.
I will.
Oh, man.
Okay.
It's so much more to talk about, but I know you got to go.
Yes.
We've got another guest calling in just a few minutes, my friend Sam Faddis with AND Magazine. But I'm going to tell people to go to that website, FRAOC, and they can find out what is going on and give support. I mean, if they can't be there physically, maybe they can make a donation and help you keep the fight going.
Yes, and I'll plug in one more, if I may. Oh, I think our time is up. Maybe next time we can talk about Pine Hills Republican Women's Federated. It's a new women's club that we've organized. Our first meeting is going to be October 20th, and it's in the Pine Hills area, which is very, very blue, very, very Democrat. And so we're starting this group, and it is a black area, and we are starting this group to try to help those women in that area, give them some truth and on what's going on, especially with Val Demings running on abortion in that particular area. We want to, you know, help people to understand, you know, what is happening with abortion and things like that. So that's our group, Pine Hills Republican Women Federated.
Fantastic. Got to make the headways in the area. Have to
make
the headways. Take America back.
It's going to. Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Bennett, for inviting me on. Thank you so much.
Sure
I really,
thing.
Really appreciate it.
You will be back again.
Okay. I would love to. All right. Thank you all. Okay.
Take
then.
Care. God
Bye-bye.
Bless. All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. We have our next victim in on the line, and this man's no one's victim. I want to welcome to the show my friend Charles Sam Battis. Good afternoon, Sam. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. How about you?
All right. I'm doing fine. Hey, listen, I see that you moved your And magazine from andmagazine.com to andmagazine.substack.com, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Actually, I was clicking through without even paying attention. Then one day I started looking, all right, let me copy down the address so I can do it for the show description. It says, how the heck did I miss it? It was just so automatic. Just signing up to your newsletter mail list at And Magazine, people get this, and then click through on your marvelous, marvelous articles.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. We moved to Substack like a lot of people have moved to Substack because Google is not our friend. And anytime you're operating online and speaking truth and relying upon advertising revenue that comes via Google, there's kind of a contradiction there. So that's the rationale behind our move and a lot of other folks to get clear of that.
Yeah, I'm finding that because Facebook right now is giving me a hard time. I've always posted the show to different groups, and one of them is a group I run. And it just bounced back saying the admin rejected. So they've got some sort of algorithm that just caught whatever keyword was in there and kicked it back to me saying, you know, violates community standards. Wait a minute, this is my group. I created this group. I want to post my own group. Jeez. And don't even get me started on YouTube because my original channel was banned. And then when I opened up a second channel, they started to ban that again until I finally said, that's it, I'm fighting back. And they put the episode with Peter Navarro back up. So.
Yeah, well, we produce some video content for And as well, not as much as we probably should just because I run out of hours in the day. But we had to move all our stuff off of YouTube as well because what discovered one day was that we went on to our YouTube channel for the magazine, for And Magazine, and a whole bunch of our content had simply been deleted. They didn't bar people from seeing it and let us know. They didn't tell us at all, and they didn't make any attempt to ensure that we had, you know, our own copies of the content. They simply destroyed, wiped clean a whole bunch of videos that we had produced and uploaded. So at that point, we said, okay, well, clearly we cannot tolerate that and had to move. We have moved all our video content to Rumble.
Ah. Now, how long are your video segments?
You know, that depends. Sometimes they're monologues, sometimes they're interviews, and I just don't make any attempt to standardize it. As I say, I really need to produce more of that and intend to. I've got so many oars in the water that at the end of the day, I just run out of time to do it. But, you know, a lot of people want to really consume information that way, and so I ought to produce more of it.
Well, your articles are absolutely spot on. And don't get me started on China. General Spaulding and I went. We could have easily gone for a whole 3 hours. But you also have your thumb on the pulse. People don't understand how insidious Chinese influence is in the United States. And when I heard that China was buying up companies like Ancestry.com, I'm going, wait a minute, what does China want to do with our DNA? And this was years before the Wuhan virus broke out. But all along, they had been saying, we want to do war and we'll use any method possible. And why wasn't anyone listening?
Yeah, well, that's one of the many puzzling things about this, right, is that you don't have to go off and find a crystal ball and conduct some surreptitious investigation or something to figure out what the Chinese Communist Party is up to, because they write it and say it about every 15 seconds that their objective is to become the dominant political, military, economic power on the planet. And unlike the Soviets, you know, the Chinese figured out that the weakness of any capitalist system is greed. And so they convinced us to climb into bed with them economically. And then by this point, they have suborned in one way or the other really huge portions of what, you know, the what they would call the elite in this country, the most powerful people. So they've sort of gotten inside the wire. And we wrote something just the other day at Ann Talk, just one of the many pieces of this, talking about, you know, how we just came through this coronavirus thing and this pandemic. And I think any reasonable person by this point accepts that the virus came out of a lab in Wuhan, China, and it was the product of risk, you know, the product of gain-of-function research. Now, you can then argue about whether you think they did that deliberately or they're just sloppy. But in any event, this virus came out, spread to the United States, and our reaction to it was catastrophically bad. I mean, we took the entire existing pandemic response plan that had been developed over many years, and we fed it into a shredder. And then from that point on, everything we did, from lockdowns to experimental vaccines, is something nobody ever contemplated and was disastrous. So however this happened, we just showed the Chinese, who have a very intense interest in biowarfare. They've never walked away from biowarfare. We just showed them that we have no idea what the heck we're doing, and what amounted to a bad cold knocked us on our rear ends. So we gave them, we have shown them the blueprint, if they didn't already have it, for how to hit us with something much, much worse, something like, you know, something that would kill on the scale of smallpox, which kills basically a third of the people it infects. So what we ought to be doing now is running like crazy to fix all of these problems before we get hit with something with the lethality of smallpox. And instead, we're obviously not changing course. And we're also allowing Chinese biotech firms to come here and set up a shop and conduct business. So these guys just
I've got
bought,
that article what, in my fat, I got that article in my fat little hands with its underlined circles, brackets, stars. It's on your page called "Are We Bent on Our Own Destruction? Chinese Bio Firms on U.S. Soil." This blew my mind because Rand Paul has been going after Fauci for the gain of function financing of this Wuhan lab. When this first broke out, before it even became front page news and we knew about it, I had friends in China that were working as missionaries. And they surreptitiously let me and my husband know what was going on, telling us, get yourself hand sanitizers, get yourself face masks. This is coming to the U.S. It's becoming out of China. They warned us, but they couldn't say it directly. It had to be more overtly, as you understand. So we knew it was coming out. And they did this around the time of the Chinese New Year, where everyone knows they travel all over the place. These are huge festival and celebrations. What better way, what better time to release this on the world? And no one listened. And guess what? Who helped fund that besides Fauci? The Gates. The money that came out of the United States from fat cats is amazing, that helped to fund this lab and this research. We paid for it. And we're paying for it again by letting them open these firms on our soil. We already know that Chinese communists have sent spies into all of our military research labs, stealing information. We've already had several people, you know, deported, I should say, or convicted of spying on us. And what do? We just open the door a little bit further and say, come on, open our lab right outside major centers of our cities.
Yeah, one of these companies that we wrote about, I mean, one of the labs, Join Biologics, is right outside San Francisco, that now they're buying 1,400 acres in Florida where they're going to raise monkeys that they will infect with diseases. So you just look at this, you just think, I really don't know whether to laugh or cry. I mean, are we insane that we would allow these people to do it? I mean, again, you know, as I always say, this has nothing to do with Chinese people as an ethnicity or a nationality.
Mm-mm.
We're talking about the Chinese Communist Party. The first people that suffer under the Chinese Communist Party more than anybody else are the Chinese people, a billion of them, that are basically held hostage by this, what amounts to a criminal organization. But these These guys make no secret of their desire to destroy us, and yet we continue to allow them to do this. I mean, I would say as somebody who, you know, was in the espionage business for a long time, for every one of these Chinese espionage cases that you read about where somebody gets busted and deported, I would say rule of thumb, assume there are 10 other guys in place. We talk all about Eric Swalwell, the congressman who was sleeping with Fang Fang or Ling Ling or whatever the heck her name is, you know, as if that's like an aberration or that was the case. You're like, no, this is not the case. That's old school espionage 101 stuff, and they're doing it all over the country to other congressmen, senators, policymakers. I mean, they're eating our lunch and largely in control of this administration, and that's the reality. And you know, it will lead to our destruction if we do not dramatically change course. I mean, you can't just let this go on.
Well, we talk about the labs. We talk about, you know, the spying with our technology, but also our education. They have gone into the universities, but they've also now gone into our elementary schools with the, Confucius academies.
Yes.
And they tie money to it. So here's the carrot and the stick, and we as blissful idiots just keep on following that carrot. You're never going to get the carrot, but they're going to get you. They'll get you to do whatever it is they want you to do.
Yeah, and people need to understand. I mean, look, everything – this is a whole-of-government effort on the part of the Chinese. If they call it the United Front. It is and it has a specific tactic, which is known as elite capture. And this is what, when I say whole of government, I mean, so this is not just like one espionage agency in the Chinese government is involved in this. The entire apparatus is involved in this. It's done on an industrial scale. There's huge amounts of money. And they're wildly, wildly successful. As you pointed out, these Confucius Institutes operate all over the place. They bill themselves as doing things like teaching you Chinese language, and you know, they're always talking in terms of friendship and understanding. And that's not what they are at all. They are propaganda institutions. But at the end of the day, they're really about recruiting people, which is the term that would be used by professionals in the human intelligence business. And the business of recruiting is not just kind of getting a guy to think like you do, or you know, altering his worldview a little bit. It's not really even about blackmailing people typically. It's about ultimately pushing whatever buttons you got to push until this guy, whoever the target is, becomes a fully controlled asset, again, the way intel agencies would talk about it. And that person formally works for whoever we're talking about, in this case, the Chinese government. In other words, they take money and they do what they're told. And that, you know, probably sounds really alien to most people, but normal people who aren't in the espionage business. But that's how it works. I mean, in CIA, if you claim you have recruited a source, in order for that, for them to accept that and for you to get credit for it, if you will, and that guy takes money and he does what he's told. He doesn't just help you. He takes orders from you, is what it boils down to. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the Chinese being wired into people all throughout the United States who take orders from Beijing. They're not just kind of inclined to help the Chinese. They do what they're told to do, and in exchange, they get some kind of compensation. That's what this is about. So back to people like Eric Swalwell, this is not just about kind of making nice with him and hoping that he'll vote the way Beijing would like. That's not the end state. The end state is these guys work for Xi Jinping. And that is very real. As bizarre as that may sound to the average person, that is very real, and it happens on a massive scale all over this country.
It does. It does. And we may talk about the education system or now politicians being recruited. You have businesses here in the United States where they have their fingers in so many different fields. Now, why would the Chinese want to own American food packing plants such as Smithfield Food? Every time I see a package of Smithfield, I burn red. How many other companies have they bought into to control? How much farmland have they picked up? How many homes are, and apartment buildings are they buying up so that they can control where we live? They're in so many things here in the United States, and we as blissful idiots go, oh, no, it's just an investment. There's nothing behind this. There's nothing untoward with it. Why can't they own an apartment building or a block of homes? Why can't they own that neighborhood? Because they want to control where and how we live.
Yeah, well, I mean, so people need to also understand as you know, backdrop to what you're saying, there's no meaningful distinction in the concept of in the context of communist China between the government and private enterprise. So
zero.
It is impossible for you as a private citizen in communist China to not do what the government tells you to do. So the government can control, does control, and does direct anything and everything it wants to. So yes, there's no such thing as this is just a Chinese businessman and he's buying this up and it has no connection to the government. Just as there's no such thing as you got a Chinese lab assistant working in a U.S. government lab and he doesn't have anything to do with the Chinese Communist Party. He is powerless to resist direction by the Chinese Communist Party. He may be, in fact, a good guy and not want to go along with this, but he doesn't actually have that option in the real world. That there's so any point of contact with any Chinese entity, you are ultimately dealing with Xi Jinping, and there really is a master plan. I was having a conversation just the other day. We were talking about Chinese these activities all over the world, where they're increasingly establishing bases in places like Iran and Cambodia and all over the place. I said, look, pull up a map, one of these ones that shows world shipping, and you can literally see the little icons that show the location of every merchant vessel at sea. And just look at it at a macro level and look at these huge streams of ships, oil tankers, and so forth, and look at every major choke point in the world, every place where critical supplies of oil and so forth flow through narrow bodies of water, and then compare that to the list of places where the Chinese are building bases and establishing basing agreements, and you will see a complete 100% correspondence. They are not randomly doing this. They are methodically creating the capabilities to shut off world trade and the flow of oil, food, and everything else. That there it is, right there in black and white. I mean, just look at it. Literally every major choke point in the world, if it doesn't already have a Chinese base, the Chinese are working on establishing a base there.
Yeah, and they think that, well, this doesn't happen around the United States. Well, look off the coast of Florida and look at how many Chinese drills rigs are sitting out there between Cuba and Florida, the Florida Keys. Anywhere along our coastline that is outside of our control, they're searching for supplies. They're controlling the shipping lanes. And what is that noise I'm getting, like a big rush?
I am not hearing it on my end.
Oh, it was just really weird, a big whoosh. Oh, like a hurricane
just
going through my headset.
Sound like the ocean or something, a high tide.
The Chinese agreeing to buy the drilling rigs.
I'm sitting at about 2,000 feet, so if we're hearing the ocean, we got a problem.
Oh, God. Global warming.
There must be some one heck of a tsunami coming if we're.
Well,
I better climb higher.
Anytime we start talking about China, weird things happen on my show. I tell you that. Someone's listening, and I don't doubt it.
Well, listen, this is down in the Bahamas, there's an area where there's a particularly deep trench. The United States Navy historically goes down. It's attack subs, and particularly before they go out on patrol, they go down, and there's basically what amounts to an acoustic range, and they operate in this area, and with a whole bunch of sensors, and it's all part of tuning up before they go on patrol. It fine tunes, you know, basically make sure that they everything when it comes down to attack subs. It boils down to being completely silent, right? No noise, no acoustic emissions. And so they basically tune up in this area before they go out on patrol. So it's about as sensitive an underwater range as you could imagine, because if you're down there and sort of capable of observing and listening to what we're doing, you have the capacity potentially to figure out how to detect our subs underwater and eliminate them. So lo and behold, over the last few years, the Chinese have developed an intense interest in basing a, air quotes, fishing fleet out of a port on the margins of this test range. Of course, the fishing fleet will not be – I mean, it may also fish, but that's obviously not its purpose. Its purpose is to provide a platform for Chinese spy vessels to go out and float around in the middle of this acoustic test range, which is one of our most sensitive naval establishments. So, I mean, at every level, at every point, all around the globe, they are all over this. And again, it is not you don't have to wonder what it's about, because they tell you all the time what it's about. It's about them becoming the dominant power on the planet. And we are letting them do it.
Well, it gets even scarier if people ever were to follow some of the things that we've been talking about all along on the show, because now they also are involved in altering how we vote. And they say, no, the Chinese could never have any influence on voting here in the United States. Yes, those little barcodes on the bottom of that little voting slip, they can alter that. They can go in and change the vote. You can see the names printed out, and it looks good. That's what you hit on the screen. That's what printed out. That's what you scan in. Hey, my vote's secure. Not so fast, right, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of my pet peeves anyway. When I go vote, I get a ballot printed out of the voting machine that I then drop in a box that's scanned later. And on one side, it has a whole bunch of names of the people that I voted for in English letters. And then on the other side, it has the QR code thing. And obviously, the machine doesn't read the English words that are printed on one side. It only reads that QR code. And strangely enough, I don't read QR code. So I don't have any idea whether that code actually tells the machine that I voted for Donald Trump or whoever, or if it tells the machine that I just voted for Joe Biden, or for that matter, I don't know that it doesn't tell the machine to change every third vote or whatever it was programmed to do. I mean, it might as well be printed in Mandarin Chinese and read only the Mandarin Chinese, because I don't read Chinese either. It's insane. I'm sure you're aware that recently, True the Vote, Catherine Engelbrecht and these guys discovered that this company that basically provides software to a huge portion of the election officials in the United States that they use to register all of the election officials and everybody who works at the polls, it turns out, according to them, that all that data is physically stored on servers that sit in Wuhan, China, for some reason. So all of that
data, Wuhan again.
Yeah, it ends up. It's not just that it's accessible from China. It's physically sitting on servers in mainland China. Now, you know, the certainly the appearance of that is pretty bad. Like, I'm pretty sure we have servers here in the United States where you could put that data. Why is it being piped to mainland China? And the guy who developed that software for this company turns out has some pretty strong connections to Chinese organizations that work with Chinese intelligence. Again, I don't know that anybody has succeeded in fully investigating it to the point of reaching a conclusion yet, but at first blush, this all smells pretty bad, right? Why is our data being piped abroad, and why is a guy with what appear to be connections to Chinese intelligence in the middle of this?
Sam.
Yes, sir.
Do you believe between now and 2024 that China will try to reclaim Taiwan?
Yes, I do. I mean, look, I'm one of these people. I believe very firmly the Chinese communists are not stupid, right? They're very methodical. They have pumped ungodly sums of money, in my opinion, to the Bidens. They have their guy sitting in the Oval Office.
To look
Taiwan is Taiwan is unfinished business. They're crystal clear on that. It's a breakaway province in their terms. It is not an independent country. And they're banging the drum really loudly right now about reunification. I cannot conceive of the possibility that they have invested this much time and energy in their connections to the Bidens, and they've got that guy sitting in the Oval Office, and they're going to let this window of opportunity pass and roll the dice on who will be in the White House in 2024. So absolutely, I think they're going to move before 2024.
Last question before you go. TikTok. Anytime I turn around to tell people, why are you on TikTok when it's run by the CPP? And no one wants to believe me. But it's true.
Yes, it is absolutely true, and there's no way on earth you should have anything to do with it. Was that the question?
Now, what is the purpose of China having people flock to TikTok? What are they looking for?
Well, I mean, they control a whole huge range of internet platforms, and they suck up data. They also feed people. They influence people. They influence people's perceptions. I mean, they one way or the other on all these social media platforms, they operate a whole bunch of bots. I mean, anytime I write something about China, I get attacked by a whole bunch of different people on different platforms that are obviously not even real people, right? They don't even. In fact, occasionally when I have a couple of extra moments and I just feel like amusing myself, I engage them online and I tell them things like, "Listen, man, if you're going to pretend to be a real American, you got to post more frequently, and you got to post on issues other than only things that matter to Xi Jinping, and you got to come up with some better photos than the ones you have." I sort of like try to school them on their trade craft. That's just to amuse myself.
Well, people can find your magazine on Substack.com and AND. Our magazine on Substack.com. Sam, it's always fun talking with you. You're so full of so much information, and we think on the same page. So, yeah, it's great.
Thank you. I'm gonna go climb to higher ground to get away from the tsunami.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
take care, folks.
Sam, God bless.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Sam Faddis, check him out over on AND Magazine. We have our final guest for the evening here, Erin Dwinell with the Heritage Foundation. She is a senior research associate on the Border Security and Immigration Center at Heritage. Good afternoon, Erin, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Annie. Happy to be on.
Oh, it is our pleasure. And one of your top articles you recently wrote dealt with the border security and sanctuary cities. Oh, boy, did you step into this one at just the right time with Martha's Vineyard and Governor DeSantis. come on. You're a sanctuary city. You say you open your arms to these illegal aliens. You want to give them a hand. So DeSantis said, yeah, fine. These people want to go up. They all said and signed, yeah, we want to go. We're going to have a nice vacation spot. And, you know, Martha's Vineyard needs some help. They need some people to mow the lawns and work the kitchens. Hey, you got cheap labor coming up to you. What's the problem?
Exactly. I mean, Florida has been spending, they've paid $2 billion per year just in health care and education for the nearly 800,000 illegal aliens living there. They send 50 up to wealthy Martha's Vineyard, and now Martha's Vineyard is crying that they can't handle it? Come on.
Send us a National Guard. Right?
Exactly. I mean, I think if nothing else, this shows us just how pervasive this border crisis is, right? I mean, if it hasn't already happened, pretty soon no corner of the country is going to be untouched and overwhelmed by everything going on between the crime, the fentanyl, and just these high costs, high economic costs of healthcare, social services, hospitals being overrun, everything under the sun.
Well, you know, I was watching a doctor's talk on Newsmax last night dealing with the fentanyl. And for many years, people with certain mental conditions were under careful doctor's care with fentanyl, but it was a much lower dosage, a different type of chemical compound than the fentanyl we have coming. Well, we know the chemicals are coming out of China. They're being put together in Mexico, brought over the border to actually go about murder Americans. What other thing can it be here for? You either get them hopelessly hooked on it or you kill them. Either way, it serves their purpose in conquering us. But no one is paying attention. And it drives me crazy when I hear about the spike in drug overdoses when they throw fentanyl in. A lot of times, most of the people that take fentanyl have no idea they took it. To me, that's a homicide. That's a murder.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, and now they're putting it in these, you know, multicolored packets that look like children's candy. So even our kids are going to be affected by this. I mean, it's the leading cause of death, fentanyl is, for young Americans aged 18 to 45. If that's not an epidemic, I don't know what is.
No, and you look at the numbers you wrote in this Sanctuary City article. Last year, New York spent $2.1 billion in state funding to pay unemployment. Now, wait a minute. These are illegal aliens who've never worked here before, as far as I know. Why are they getting unemployment benefits? They didn't have a job and get laid off from the job. How do they get unemployment? They get stimulus checks?
That's a great question. So under federal law, it's illegal for illegal aliens to receive government funds, right, for social services, unemployment benefits, everything. Unfortunately, there's plenty of states and Democrat-run sanctuary cities that just make their own laws. They just disregard these federal laws that have been on the books for years, for decades, and nobody really does anything about it. There are some states, thankfully, that do enforce those federal laws or kind of beef them up with their own state laws, right, to make sure that their state's not encouraging more illegal aliens to come in. But these states like New York, they disregard federal law. They welcome these aliens in by being sanctuary cities, and then hardworking, tax-paying Americans bear the brunt of it.
You know, what I found amazing is that some of these states are also giving them Social Security. No, wait a minute. You're telling me that Social Security is going broke. You're going to turn around and take benefits for those of us that paid into the system our entire life, are now retired, depending upon it, or we have been disabled while working and require that Social Security disability. You're going to take my money that I worked hard for, I could have put in the bank and made a lot of interest on it and lived pretty as a millionaire, but now you insist on me giving this to the government, and you were going to give it back to me, and now you're telling me I can't get it back because you're going to give it to illegal aliens? My head's spinning.
Mine too. And, you know, it's I think every American is in the same boat, right? We all pay into that system. Our parents or our grandparents paid in their whole lives. And now this next generation coming up is saying, oh, no, is there going to be enough for me? And then that little bit that might be left is just being ripped away, given to people who didn't earn it.
Now, it's gotten out of control, and I think we're going to see a huge pushback on this election cycle. Ron DeSantis and Governor Abbott are doing a great job on exposing what the problem is, but now it's not just the fentanyl that's coming across. Methamphetamines is now on an increase, and they're going back to the old standard pot, but they're lacing the pot. So this isn't the pot that we had in the 60s and 70s. This is some whole nother creature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you mentioned before that obviously China is behind a lot of these drugs that are flowing across the border. What an easy way to weaponize, drugs to harm Americans when there's no vetting for a lot of people coming across the border. Who knows what they're bringing? There's no control over what those substances actually are, even if, they say, this is, like you said, this is pot. Is it really? Why would we trust the Chinese? Why would we trust the cartels to even be telling the truth about what's coming across the border at this point? We just don't know.
And, the borders are so porous, there are over individuals from over 60 different nations that are now pouring across this border. Oh, that's no big deal. We're just going to put them on a bus or an airplane and fly them into the middle of upstate New York or out to, somewhere in Wyoming. We just say, hey, listen, would you like to go to Wyoming? Yeah, sign this little form. And you see those blissful idiots meeting the buses, shaking their hands, patting them on the back, and then giving them our tax dollars to welcome them into our nation after they committed crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what? Those folks, whether they know it or not, those people patting people on the back and meeting them at the buses really are involved in illegal alien smuggling. These folks are illegally in the country. They're not supposed to be transported around like this. But the Biden administration started all of this when they flew these aliens throughout the country under the cover of darkness in the middle of the night. Didn't tell governors that he was sending them to their state, right? So now all these people across the nation are being affected by these illegal aliens. These governors have no other choice. And then these people, these NGOs, are basically picking these folks up, right, when they get somewhere. And they're saying, what can we do for you? What can we give you? We'll give you debit cards. We'll give you cell phones. We'll give you free housing, free shelter. We'll give you, bus tickets, plane tickets. Paid for by the government contracting out to these NGOs, right? So where does that money ultimately come from again? The American taxpayer.
Exactly, exactly. And unfortunately, a lot of these NGOs happen to come from religious institutions, such as the Catholic bishops. And they're making a huge amount of money for the church, but they're doing nothing to protect their parishioners. We're seeing an increase in severe illnesses, diseases that we had eradicated for decades, leprosy, tuberculosis, scarlet fever. You can go on down that list. And we're not just talking about COVID. They're not being screened.
Absolutely. I mean, the COVID double standards are a whole nother can of worms. I mean, you had this administration keeping harsh restrictions on Americans, whether it came to mask mandates, vaccine mandates, capacity requirements in restaurants, what have you, and no flow of the flow at the southern border, just continuing to allow all these aliens in, unvaccinated, untested for COVID. So was it a pandemic or was it not? The Biden administration needs to get its facts straight. It doesn't line up.
No, it doesn't. It does not. But, thankfully, it's now starting to get exposed, and people are starting to say enough is enough. And what does the U.S. Homeland Security do instead of worrying about national security and border security? Oh, we have an equity action plan. What the heck is an equity action plan?
So, gosh, don't get me started on this.
Oh, yes, I am.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, this is ridiculous. This is across the federal government at this point, right? Now, these institutions, these federal government institutions, there's been, you know, Democrat administrations before that have kind of played around with these equity and inclusion measures, almost like an affirmative action light in some senses. But this administration has taken it to an entirely new level, and they are implementing these equity action plans, and I'll get further into what that all means in a second, across all federal agencies. It's especially pervasive in the Department of Homeland Security. It's running rampant. They are unashamedly contracting out, providing legs up to specific businesses or folks who align with their agenda, whether that be critical race theory, whether that be gender ideology. They're creating pathways and focusing so much efforts on making sure that taxpayers' money go to specific contractors that this administration likes, that aligns with their agenda. And they're doing it under the name of equity.
It's called Executive Order 13985, titled, and you can do this all in one breath, I'll be amazed, Executive Order on Advancing Racial Equity and Support for Underserved Communities Through the Federal Government. It took two breaths.
Right, and it's not equity at all. You know, equity should be based on a fair playing field. Everybody should have the same shot. Instead, they're picking and choosing who they like, giving an unfair advantage to, like I said, somebody who aligns with their gender ideology agenda or something like that. It's completely unfair. It's discrimination rather than true equity.
Well, you write on your thing, it serves to discriminate based on skin color, among other things, which then flies in the face of the 14th Amendment and the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And I would add in... there's a federal law that if you contract out to an outside agency, you have to get all the contracts together, vet them, and, you know, go for the one that's the least expensive. But they're not doing that. They're not reaching out for someone to do a bunch of bids, then go through all the bids, and then decide which one is the best one. They're just saying, oh, because you believe in CRT, or if you're part of this community or that community, or you feel that you're racially discriminated against because of your skin color and you're not white, that's okay. We'll give you the contract.
Right. And, I mean, it would be atrocious if the narrative was flipped, right, if they were focusing on white-owned contracts or something like that. Of course, we all agree that would be terrible, right? So why is it okay for them to pick another group of people based on skin color or some other characteristic and discriminate in favor of them?
Now, the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties at DHS is at the helm of doing this. And you say the seven key programs, and one of them is applying for naturalization, which means that, you know, you should have come here legally. You're a legal alien resident. But now they're throwing legal aliens under the bus unless they have certain gender markers?
Yes. So before I worked for the Heritage Foundation, I worked for years for a contractor at U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, which is a component of the Department of Homeland Security. And it's kind of intertwined every so often with the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties. And I know personally that when this administration came in, they spent ridiculous amounts of time on gender markers projects. Right. The mission of the Department of Homeland Security is to secure the homeland, to protect against terrorist threats and the like. And what is the department doing? It's making sure that there's 20, 30, 50, whatever, different options, plus an other box that aliens can check on benefit application forms. And they're spending valuable time and money changing every single one of those forms across the agency when they could be either vetting applications like they're supposed to be spending time doing, or working on other projects to keep up the vetting process for these aliens? Where are their priorities in all the wrong places?
And there's 8.5 million cases backlogged while they do this, and they've been waiting for years. But no, we're going to worry about, you know, catering to less than 1% of 1%. It's absolutely outrageous. Now, this is really where you mentioned this earlier. Their actual job is countering all forms of terrorism and targeted violence. But they're not going the way we're thinking. They're going after you and me.
Yeah, so the Department of Homeland Security Secretary himself, as well as the President himself, continue to refer to white supremacy as the greatest threat to the homeland. And we look at that, and I wonder if they're paying any attention to the border, if they're paying any attention to the terrorist screening database hit from folks who come across the border illegally all the time. I'm wondering if they're looking at the fentanyl crisis, these drugs being sent across to target and harm Americans, and they're hyper-focusing on what they deem as signs of white supremacy, which we know in their minds, in their documents, include things like the Gadsden flag. Ted Cruz had a really great exchange a few months ago in a hearing where he pulled out his cowboy boot that had the Gadsden flag on it, and he said that this is deemed a white supremacist symbol by the FBI and other federal agencies. And that's just ridiculous.
They went after the Betsy Ross flag. Oh, by the way, President Biden was sworn in under the Betsy Ross flag. Really? Really. The American flag is a sign of racism. And the hits just keep on coming. And also I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it may have come full circle, because I would say that this current president is quite a threat to the homeland. So maybe they're onto something.
You got me there. I should have thought of that one. You got me there. But we're not out of the woods with this Ministry of Truth in the Department of Homeland Security. They now, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency is now flagging misinformation instead of actual cyber attacks on our citizens and our government. Wait. I thought cybersecurity was making sure we had a free flow of information, that our systems are secure, our secrets are secure, our records are secure. But no, that's not what they're doing anymore.
No, they're not. And the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, that I in CISA there stands for infrastructure, not information. So nowhere in their job description is there flagging and taking down what they deem to be disinformation or misinformation. And there are real threats that our infrastructure systems face, right? There could be all sorts of attacks from foreign adversaries. China, Russia, Iran have all made threats on children's hospitals and their technology systems, for goodness sake. And instead of making sure that they're guarding our nation against those types of serious threats from the likes of Iran, China, and Russia, they're looking at what Americans are posting on the internet and whether they think it's true or not.
You know, I've had stuff taken down saying it was misinformation. As a matter of fact, on my own Facebook page, I have a group that I wanted to post the show to, which I've posted for the last several years into the group. Suddenly it says the administrator at this group rejected it. Wait a minute. I'm the administrator. I'm posting this. So they've got the algorithms out there in the social networks, and just now cybersecurity through DHS is doing the same exact thing. If they're not being taken down by the social networks that are playing ball with this administration, and then you're being taken down by the administration itself. You can't win. We're in a lose-lose situation here.
Absolutely. And they're picking and choosing the quote-unquote misinformation that fits their agenda. We know that the Department of Homeland Security as a whole did little to nothing to censor misinformation or disinformation when the violent Black Lives Matter riots were going on in the summer of 2020. They didn't take down harmful violence or misinformation from social media during those times, but they'll take down what they deem to be COVID misinformation or something like that. So it's quite the double standard in every area.
Well, why wasn't Biden's speech just the other day where he said, "I hate MAGA Republicans"? This is coming from the President of the United States. I mean, it's one thing for Hillary Clinton to say a basket of deplorables, but for the President of the United States, the sitting president, to say, "I hate MAGA Republicans"? You just took half the country and just threw it out with the baby with the bathwater. Excuse me? Mm-hmm. These are your mm-hmm. citizens.
No. Absolutely. It's unacceptable. And the fact that he continues to make those comments, you know, about what did he say, ultra-MAGA Republicans or something like that, and that awful speech recently where there was the red background,
just
holding his fists up, that is an angry man. And he's angry at Americans, and that's sad and that's scary.
That it is. And the question is whether or not he's mentally capable to remain in office. Because when you have Nancy Pelosi, or as I call her, Nasty Pelosi, when asked whether or not he's going to run, she kind of waffles on that. When his own press secretary, whatever her name is, it just went out the window in my head, she says the same thing. Well, he hasn't decided yet. It's telling me the Democrats are looking at what's happening, the backlash that's coming, and it's going to be a big backlash, isn't it? I think it is.
I sure hope so. I think Americans are waking up, and I think that they'll hold their elected officials accountable this next cycle. I sure hope so.
Well, we're going to see what happens because as it stands now, there's a lot going on, and holy moly, with this immigration, if this does not get taken under control, I don't know where our nation will stand, because all they're going to try to do is get themselves a whole new voter bloc come 2024 with these illegal aliens. Yeah, I think that's their main goal, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's quite the crisis, and I think, you know, if we can get sensible folks into office, there are very quick, practical ways to get a handle on that border. Just building the wall system, re-implementing a Remain in Mexico policy or something like that, which basically just sends illegal aliens back into Mexico and says, you wait there while we decide whether you're allowed to come in or not, while we vet you. That was a policy implemented under the Trump administration. It worked. We have the steps to fix the border crisis. This administration just refuses to implement those policies. We just need change, and we can start to get this border crisis under control.
Well, my co-host just posted in the chat room the name of the press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre. Yes, that individual. That's why I want nothing to do with it. That's why it goes in one ear and out the other on me. But anyway, it is so delightful to speak with you, Erin. One last question, because I heard this just before coming on air, that there was a report of Mexico now amassing troops at the southern border. Do you think they're going to push back against us deporting them and doing the Remain in Mexico?
Well, that policy has been done away with, unfortunately, under this administration. So they're not doing that anymore. So I don't know that would be the reason for it. But that's certainly something to keep an eye on.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, and enjoy your weekend. God bless.
Thank you. You as well.
All right. Erin Duernell with the Heritage Foundation. Find her at heritage.org. We're down to our last few minutes here on the show. I just want to remind people to join us next week. We will be back. Adam Andrzejewski will be joining us from Open the Books. Darius Mayfield will be joining us. Beth Heath, We Can Be Heroes. Mark Capscott from the Epic Times. And Heritage will be sending us a new guest also. So we have a lot to talk about next week. We've got a full schedule already set up. We're now booking into
October. And I want to thank everyone. And I see Panky just came in into the studio, but we're down to our last 4 minutes. I'm sorry about that. It's time to close the show and say good night and God bless to everyone.
All right. Take care.
So, I want to thank everyone that joined us over on Facebook and YouTube. I'm sorry I did not get up onto the other group pages like I had hoped. For some reason, I'm going to find out why they kicked me off my own page. Also onto iHeart, iStreams, YouTube. Oh, the heck with it. Just go to the name of the show next week, put a dash in the middle, and see us live. So until then, I say good night and God bless, and I leave you with my friend Gary Pecorella, Save America.
We have loved and lost, and we still